news break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. U.S. soldiers in Iraq were plagued by low morale, experienced spikes in suicides last July and November, and lacked access to some medications sought by military mental health specialists to treat emotional problems, Army experts reported on Thursday. A 12-person Army mental health advisory team issued a 38-page report on issues faced by U.S. soldiers in Iraq, including suicide, combat stress, and the availability of help from the Army. The team traveled to Iraq from August to October 2003 and interviewed almost 760 soldiers. The report found a significant proportion of soldiers experienced and reported behavioral health concerns and that there was an unmet need for behavioral services. Trying to blunt allegations the Bush administration mishandled terror threats before September 11th, the White House is offering to let George W. Bush's top national security aide meet privately for a second time with a federal panel investigating the terrorist attacks. The offer comes amid a continued effort by the White House to discredit former counterterrorism chief Richard Clark, a tactic that is beginning to show signs of backfiring. Senate Democratic leader Tom Daschle joined the fray, accusing the administration of character assassination against Clark. Questions have been raised as to why Rice has appeared on numerous television programs over the past few days, yet still refuses to testify publicly in front of the 9/11 Commission. John Curry, promising to create 10 million jobs and keep them in America, has announced a proposal to cut corporate taxes by 5% and eliminate tax loopholes that push jobs overseas. The Democratic presidential nominee-in-waiting said he would fight a reluctant Congress and special interests to carry out the most far-reaching changes in international corporate tax law in four decades. Kerry overrode the objections of some advisors who opposed the corporate tax cut on political grounds. More Minuteman News after this.
I'm Oscar Davis. You may have a serious eye condition and not even know it. Vision loss is not a normal part of aging. Some vision changes are normal. Some are due to eye disease. Do you know the difference? Open your eyes to the facts. To get more information about vision and aging, or find out about what help is available if you're having vision problems, call Lighthouse International at 1-800-829-0500 or visit www.lighthouse.org.
A German woman's joy at the recovery of her missing handbag quickly turned to sorrow after she sped drunk to the police station to fetch it and had her driver's license confiscated, authorities said Thursday. She was so happy to hear about the bag, she jumped straight into the car and came down to get it, said a spokesman. The thing is, we saw her coming. She'd had a lot to drink. The 38-year-old parked in front of the police station but failed to hide the fact that she was inebriated from officers. The first thing she got out of the bag was her license, which we took, along with her car keys, said a spokesman. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Old loopholes never die. They just get loopier and loopier. One such is a special tax break gouged into federal law back in 1980 by corporate lobbyists. In response to the energy crisis of the time, this loophole was ostensibly created to give companies an incentive to devise marketable alternatives to imported oil. But all it really has done is give companies an excuse to dodge paying the taxes they owe to Uncle Sam. The loophole is the Synfuels tax credit for companies that reprocess coal to create new synthetic fuels. But the law's provisions are so vague that corporations have been able to claim the tax break even if their reprocessing doesn't work, doesn't reduce our dependence on oil, actually uses oil products in the so-called reprocessing, is never marketed, or is just plain silly. How silly? So silly that the IRS has given the Synfuels tax credit to companies that have done nothing but spray starch or diesel fuel or even Elmer's glue on coal. Corporations, ranging from utilities to the Marriott hotel chain, have leapt through this loophole like wolves leaping for a lamb chop. The result is that they have dodged about $2 billion a year in taxes they owe, for in increased taxes or reduced services. This scam will soon grow to $10 billion a year, for more corporations have spied the lamb chop and are going for it. Finally, the IRS decided to crack down by reviewing whether the company's so-called SynFuels actually worked. Yet, even this long overdue step was assailed by SynFuel profiteers, their lobbyists, and their puppets in Congress. They went after the IRS, threatening the agency's enforcement budget and hauling the IRS commissioner to the woodshed. Unsurprisingly, the IRS recently succumbed to the corporate pressure. This is Jim Hightower saying, so the loopiness keeps getting loopier and the rich keep getting richer.
Wow, that's hot.
I think it's cool.
At that speed, definitely hot.
I don't see it that way.
I forgot, you're more right brain.
Right. 24 prints a minute. That's cool.
In black and white or color?
Cool.
For under $1,000.
Cool.
From Xerox?
Really cool.
Sorry, 24 color pages a minute is nothing but hot.
You think anything that's fast is hot?
That's cold.
The new Xerox Phaser 8400, the world's fastest office color printer for under $1,000. To find out how
cool,
hot it really is, visit Xerox.com/office.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too. But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, happy Friday! Happy Friday! Shabbat Shalom, TGIF, end of the week here, at least for some of us. And an interesting week it has been. I think this has probably been, this was supposed to be the victory week for the Bush administration. This was the week that they were rolling out the Kerry ads and they were just going to slap that guy down. They were going to go back. They went back to votes he cast 15 years ago in a completely other context, twisted them around, spun them into an ad, as, of course, we, you know, as no less than Bob Dole said they would do, because essentially it's what Bill Clinton did to Bob Dole. I mean, you know, this is how the game is played. Took an old vote, a couple of old votes, spun it around. Bob, John Kerry wants to raise tax. John Kerry votes for... And this was supposed to be the slam dunk. Define John Kerry before John Kerry has a chance to define John Kerry. Because other than people in Iowa and New Hampshire and, of course, in Massachusetts, his home state... Other than a few of those states that had early primaries where there was actually, you know, a fair amount of advertising and arguing and debating going on, most people don't have a clue who John Kerry is. And even in those states, it was mostly the Democratic, you know, kind of hardcore Democratic base that was paying attention to those things. And your swing voters and your average voters and your Republicans who are disenchanted with George Bush, and trust me, there's a bunch of them out there, didn't really have a chance to get to know who John Kerry was. And so this was the grand strategy. We're going to use a couple of weeks here, and we are going to tell the American people who this guy is, that he's a weasel, he's a waffle, he waffles, he takes different positions on everything, he's weak on defense, he wants to raise your taxes, on and on and on and on and on. Right. And instead, and of course they did that. In fact, one of the polls shows that John Kerry lost last week, the first week of the onslaught, the multi-million-dollar onslaught of Bush television buys. John Kerry lost 10 points. George Bush is ahead again. Well, you know, there will be lots of coming and going in this thing. But this week, turns out, this week that's wrapping up now, turns out to really have been the week when George Bush himself, who, you know, and it got redefined. I mean, the conventional wisdom was, everybody knows who George Bush is. Whether you like him or hate him, everybody knows who he is. The big job now in the political arena is for John Kerry to define himself. And along comes Richard Clark. And he says, you know, I'm not quoting him here, but the essence of what he said was, you know, that guy who has been claiming that he's been protecting the country and he's a war president and he's all about defending us, he's lying to you. He did not take seriously the threat of terrorism. You know, MoveOn.org right now has a contest going on, and James Carville has jumped into it. He's offered a free copy of his book. I'll toss in a free copy of one of my books, your choice, to whoever is the first person to show where George Bush, anytime from coming into office until 9/10/01, till the day before 9/11, used the word Al-Qaeda in public. Now, the Clinton administration was obsessed with this, which is one of the reasons, I guess, why the Bush administration said, hey, if they think it's important, we don't want to go there. All things Clinton are bad, right? That was the mantra of the Bush administration. So anyhow, we have Condi Rice here. Andy Borowitz reports in the Borowitz report, missed chances in hunt for Condoleezza Rice. Where's Condi? Search for Dr. Rice lacked urgency, Clark alleges. The United States came close on several occasions to finding missing National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, but failed to do so because the Bush White House did not feel that locating Dr. Rice was a top priority, former counterterrorism chief Dick Clark alleged today. In startling testimony before Congress, Mr. Clark said that the search for the elusive Dr. Rice had been, quote, littered with missed opportunities, end quote. He went on to say, one time I thought I saw her scurrying down the hall and I yelled, wait up, but she was gone. From that moment on, I tried to convince the White House that finding Condoleezza Rice should be the nation's number one priority. But Mr. Clark said he got the distinct impression the White House did not share his sense of urgency. They seemed much more interested in finding Vice President Cheney, he said. In a vigorous rebuttal, Secretary of State Colin Powell disputed Mr. Clark's version of events, telling Congress that the administration had spent 8 months devising a detailed plan to locate Condoleezza Rice. Mr. Powell said, we were planning to throw everything we had at the search for Dr. Rice, including armed Predator drones and President Musharraf of Pakistan. As for the search for Vice President Cheney, Mr. Powell was upbeat. We believe, he said, that once we find Justice Antonin Scalia, we will also find Vice President Cheney, since the two of them are virtually inseparable. In concluding his testimony, Dick Clark stated once again that he would not accept a position in the potential Kerry administration, but he would continue as host of New Year's Rockin' Eve. And thanks to Andy Borowitz, borowitzreport.com, for that insightful report. Now, for the real report. I mean, it's fascinating. Condoleezza Rice is still refusing to testify under oath. Yesterday I said that last night I was going to try and catch the NBC Evening News and see if Tom Brokaw called her on her lie to him and to the American people. This, of course, being that
the president increased counterterrorism funding several-fold in order to be more aggressive.
And it turns out that's simply, not only is it not true, but that he actually cut counterterrorism funding and cut counterterrorism efforts in the first, in the time leading up to 9/11, which, of course, is the time that she was talking about in that quote. But I got busy. I'm sorry. I missed it. If any of you saw the NBC Evening News last night, let me know if Tom Brokaw made it straight. I'd be curious to know. In today's Madison.com, the newspaper from Madison, Wisconsin here. It doesn't, I don't think I have a reference. Yeah, okay. Madison.com is operated by Capital Newspapers, published by the Wisconsin State Journal. Here we are. This is an article by John Nichols. He talks about how the Bush administration spent all last Friday, you know, going on and on about, we're about to capture the number two guy. Remember that? I mean, that was the big news story before the weekend came. And he goes on to say, this is John Nichols, Murdoch speaks, Condi Rice jumps. John Nichols in the Madison, Wisconsin State Journal. He says, surely National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, a key player on all the fronts that were in play, had a very long list of responsibilities. No time for diversions on Friday, right? I mean, we're tracking down keep in mind, a week ago today, we were tracking down the number two guy in Pakistan. We had all this stuff going on with that. Spain just went through this incredible upheaval. A couple of days earlier, the president of Poland had said that he was lied to. Talk about crises. You'd think Condi Rice would be busy, right? Well, maybe not. Rice took time out of the middle of the day to address a secretive gathering that included global media mogul Rupert Murdoch and top executives from television networks, newspapers, and other media properties all owned by Murdoch's News Corp conglomerate. Rice spoke at some length via satellite to Murdoch and his cronies, who had gathered at the posh Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Cancun, according to reports published in the British press. Why wasn't this in the American press? Other than in Madison, Wisconsin. The presence of Rice, John Nichols reports, underlines the importance of Rupert Murdoch's news operations to the Bush administration. Oh, he's quoting from The Guardian. This is a newspaper in England. The Guardian account of the Cancun gathering explained, in addition to Fox, Murdoch controls the Bush-friendly Weekly Standard magazine, the New York Post newspaper, as well as 35 local television stations. Thanks to Bush administration appointees to the Federal Communications Commission, Murdoch's reach is rapidly expanding in the United States. In December, the FCC approved News Corp's $6.6 billion takeover of DirecTV, the country's leading satellite television firm. That decision made Murdoch the only media executive in the world with satellite, cable, and broadcast assets in the United States. So, concludes John Nichols, it seems that when the National Commission on Terrorist Attacks upon the United States calls, the Bush administration's national security advisor is not available. But when Rupert Murdoch calls, well, how could Condi Rice refuse? Actually now, Condi Rice has said that she will appear before the panel. However, she won't appear under oath. Now, what truly amazes me is the number of times that I have seen reporters in the last couple of days. I mean, this basically came out yesterday, since yesterday. The number of reporters who say Condoleezza Rice will, in fact, testify before the 9/11 Commission. She wants to clear up some misperceptions. And they fail to add that she refuses to testify not only in open session, but she refuses to be put under oath. She will not be put under oath. And anytime you hear a news reporter talk about her testimony, her secret testimony, and they don't mention the fact that she's refusing to speak under oath, you might want to contact that news organization and say, hey, are you not paying attention to what's going on here? 1-866-889-8894, Friday afternoon. Hey, Armand. Armand in Florida's on the line. What's up, Armand?
Yeah, can I read something real quick about Christian values?
If it's real, real short, I just do not like reading on the air.
I know, Tom, but please let me do this, and let me go with it here. I call this Christian values. Would Jesus take payoffs from the rich and then borrow and bankrupt a country so the rich can get richer?
Would Jesus
lie about a country and then send off other people's children to die in an illegal war?
I'd kind of
so
doubt
his
it.
Family's trust can get richer, i.e. Carlyle Group?
I kind of doubt
know
that, too.
Now why Bush kept reading in that third-grade classroom on 9/11. He wants to bring his intellectual level up to third-grade standards. We have a third-rate president that's a greedy liar, and apparently many of his supporters can't read also. Boy, would Jesus be ashamed.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you, Harmon. That, you know, nice piece, a little gratuitous. Frankly, I'm not fond of calling names. I think ultimately it hurts the cause. I really do. I know I get, you know, it's funny. I get emails from people going, you know, you are such a raving, screaming liberal. How dare you say this and that? Yeah, I get these all the time. And then I get them from people on the left. You're not hard enough on these people. You know, I guess, they say you're doing something right when everybody attacks you. And that certainly is the case here. But in any case, in response to that, Armin, I don't think that this administration is playing out the worldview that Jesus had. And I don't, you know, I've. Let's point out George Bush's lies, but that doesn't mean that calling him a liar is necessarily of much value, frankly. I mean, yeah, let people draw their own conclusions. It'll actually have a lot more emotional impact on them if they draw their own conclusions than if you do name-calling. That's the bottom line for me. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. A little more about Condi Rice. Oh, George Bush and weapons of mass destruction. Stay tuned.
In my country, a group of religious extremists are reshaping the government to promote their own agenda and morality.
The government can keep a list of everyone I call, and they do not need a judge's permission.
Our citizens are seized and held in prison without being charged of a crime, without the right to a trial, and without a lawyer. Why should you care about what is happening to my country? Because my country is the United States of America.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he a guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Good.
And welcome back. Discussing solutions and not false promises. And not getting into ranting and rave. Well, okay, I rant and rave. It's an interesting conversation going on in our chat room right now. You can get in. Yeah, it's a live chat during this program. Those of you who are listening on radio stations across the country or on the Sirius satellite, if you have access to a web browser, just point it to tomhartmann.com, www.tomhartmann.com. I actually spell my name T-H-O-M, Hartman with two N's, but you can spell it any way you want, and it'll get you there because we've got all four misspellings. And when you get to tomhartmann.com, and you just click live chat or chat room, I forget which it says, and it'll drop you into a forum on CompuServe, and we're actually moving that forum over the weekend. On Monday, it's going to be in the Democratic forum. Right now, it's in the it's kind of funky New Age forum. But anyhow, on Monday, we're going to be in the Democratic forum. It was a choice, that or the Republican forum. So I took the Democratic forum. And you can drop in and have a conversation with a whole bunch of some really extraordinary people. And very often we get visitors in the chat room from overseas, and you get a wide variety of viewpoints, interesting insights, nice comments, and sometimes some real conflict. I mean, yeah, every now and then we'll get somebody in there who just thinks that I'm totally nuts and stirs the thing. It's all positions, just like with the phones. If you want to call 1-866-889-8894, all opinions are welcome. We do not screen callers here other than to make sure that somebody is not intoxicated or, 8 years old. Right. That's it. I mean, you know, who are you? Where are you from? If you want to disagree with me, that's wonderful. Someday I've got to do only people who disagree with me get to call this. The problem is there haven't been that many. So anyway, here we have George Bush last night. Speaking of the jokes in bad taste, and there was one in our chat room. No, I'm not going to tell it. It was a good one, but I'm not going to tell it. Somebody in the chat room told a great tasteless George Bush joke, but I'm not going to do it. But anyhow, last night, or Wednesday night rather, George Bush was at this black tie event for TV and radio journalists. And he narrated a slideshow. Now, this is a situation where he's expected to be funny. But whoever the funny guy is on the White House staff who writes the jokes for him should be fired. From The Guardian, of course, there's stories all over the place, in the New York Times and every place else. A slide showed Mr. Bush in the Oval Office leaning to look under a piece of furniture. And he says to the audience, "Those weapons of mass destruction have got to be here somewhere." Another slide showed him peering into another part of the office. "No, no weapons over there," he said, laughing. "Maybe over here," he said. "Maybe under here," he said, as a third slide was shown as he's looking underneath another piece of furniture. John Kerry responded, "If George Bush thinks his deceptive rationale for going to war is a laughing matter, then he's even more out of touch than we thought. Unfortunately for the president, this is not a joke." Now, this is being said by a man who was actually wounded in battle. He added, 585 American soldiers have been killed in Iraq in the last year. 3,354 have been wounded, and there's no end in sight. George Bush sold us on going to a war in Iraq based on the threat of weapons of mass destruction. We still haven't found him, and he thinks that's funny? Iraqi war veteran Brad Owen says, "War is the single most serious event that a president or government can carry its people into. This cheapens the sacrifice that American soldiers and their families are dealing with every single day." End quote. CNN viewers were writing in, "How can a caring, thinking human being joke about the lies that led to body bags and broken young men and women? I was appalled," wrote one viewer into CNN. Another, "It was tasteless and childish. It shows the true man or child in this sense." Imagine what would happen if Lyndon Johnson had done something. Let me tell you about that right after this break. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Stick around. We'll be right back.
On December 10th, the Bush administration joined 45 states, warning Americans not to eat fish with high mercury levels that can cause birth defects and learning disabilities. But days later, the administration said it wanted to give power plants permission to shower more mercury onto our lakes and streams for 10 years longer than the law allows. Sound fishy? Mr. President, there's a better way to strengthen the State of the Union. Protect us, not the polluters who contributed to your campaign.
enforce the Clean Air Act.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A Pyrrhic victory for opponents to a Department of Labor plan to increase overtime pay exemptions. Democrats in the U.S. Senate managed to amend a trade and tax bill with a provision that would stop the department from cutting off OT to as many as 8 million people. Efforts to remove the provision from the bill have failed, but instead of keeping debate alive on the issue, Senate Republicans yesterday pulled the legislation from the floor. This leaves the Department of Labor free to move forward with the overtime massacre, and it's scheduled to go down on Tuesday.
15 years ago this month, an Exxon Valdez oil tanker hit a reef off the coast of Alaska, spilling millions of gallons of oil into the ocean, devastating local wildlife and communities depending on these now contaminated natural resources for survival. Hundreds of workers who were employed by Exxon as part of the toxic cleanup are now getting sick, and Alaska Community Action on Toxics members are asking the federal government to add more than $100 million to the $900 million settlement it reached with Exxon in 1991. Many workers like Phyllis LeJoe suffer from respiratory trouble, neurological impairment, liver disease, and skeletal deterioration.
I now have emphysema, asthma, multiple allergies, chemical sensitivities, and I also developed diabetes. I'm a mess, let's put it that way. The papers were full of articles about dead animals, but I never saw one report in any newspaper of any of my friends.
Exxon denies any responsibility for the workers' illnesses, suggesting these people could have been exposed to crude oil chemicals elsewhere. It's unclear as to whether Senator Tom Stevens will support the reopener request.
6,500 part-time workers at Walt Disney World have their first union contract. It raises their minimum wage, implements a grievance process, and awards seniority benefits to part-timers. The workers ratified the deal on Wednesday. It took more than a year for the company to recognize the union and seriously negotiate the new contract. Now Disney World turns its attention to negotiations with more than 25,000 full-time union workers at the park whose contract expires in May.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 93 years ago this week, the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory in New York City caught fire. 146 mostly young immigrant women burnt alive because the owner had locked them in the factory. The disaster led to the creation of a series of state laws that dramatically improved safety conditions within factories. Yet fires and explosions are still a workplace hazard. The Department of Labor says fires and explosions killed more than 600 people in the last 5 years.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 26 minutes before the hour. Even if Bush, this from an article in The Nation by David Korn, about George Bush's joke on Wednesday night. He says, even if Bush does not believe that he lied to or misled the public, how can he make fun of the rationale for a war that has killed and maimed thousands, and I would say actually tens of thousands, if you include Iraqi civilians? And I think we should. I mean, they're human beings just as much as anybody else. Imagine if Lyndon Johnson had joked about the trumped-up Gulf of Tonkin incident that he deceitfully used as a rationale for U.S. military action in Vietnam. Who knew that fish had torpedoes? If LBJ had made a joke like that. Or if Ronald Reagan appeared at a correspondence event following the truck bombing at the Marines barracks in Beirut, where over 200 American servicemen died, and said, gee, guess we forgot to put on a stoplight. Or if Bill Clinton had come out after the bombing of Serbia, during which U.S. bombs errantly, mistakenly destroyed the Chinese embassy, killed a bunch of people there, and said, well, the problem is these embassies, they all look alike. I think the thing that bothered Korn the most is as the audience laughed, so did George. And there's a lot of people really, I mean, frankly, very troubled by this. Number one, that he would have the poor taste to make jokes about the fact that the reason that he gave us for going to war turns out to be wrong, and increasing evidence is that it's not only wrong, that it was a lie. And number two, that he himself laughs about it in public, in a public event. It's, I mean, and then you got Dick Cheney. I mean, you know, ever reliant Dick Cheney. This was back in September of last year. Dick Cheney making a comment, you know, about, well, you know, we want to try and establish, you know, this is when the WMD thing was still in the air. This is in September 14th. Meet the press. And he was like, they were starting, it was becoming obvious that there might not be weapons of mass destruction. So they were starting to add, you know, well, actually, we went there to establish democracy. Well, why don't we go into Zimbabwe to establish democracy? Why don't we go into Burma? I mean, you want a really repressive regime. The Burmese regime makes Saddam Hussein look like a piker. You know, but anyhow, here's his comment. And
if we're successful in Iraq, if we can stand up a good representative government in Iraq that secures the region so that it never again becomes a threat to its neighbors or to the United States, so it's not pursuing weapons of mass destruction, so that it's not a safe haven for terrorists.
Well, it turns out, you know, of course, it wasn't pursuing weapons of mass destruction. It wasn't a threat to its neighbors, and it wasn't a haven for al-Qaeda, for terrorists. But nonetheless, Cheney goes on.
And we will have struck a major blow right at the heart of the base, if you will, the geographic base of the terrorists who've had us under assault now for many years, but most especially on 9/11.
Oh, 9/11. Iraq had to do with 9/11. And because Iraq is in the region where Saudi Arabia is, where 15 of the 19 hijackers came from, or Afghanistan is, where the training camps were held, then, you know, isn't that a sort of like after Japan attacked us at Pearl Harbor, saying, well, we need to go to the heart of the region of Southeast Asia. What's the heart of the region? Well, southern China. Let's attack China. But, of course, you wouldn't do that unless there was a good reason, and then Cheney, in a rare moment of candor, lays out the real reason.
Iraq sits on top of 10% of the world's oil reserves. Very significant reserve, second only to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, Bernie Sanders is not going to be with us today. He's on an airplane to, or back home from Washington, D.C., during our program. Called last night and apologized. So here we are, Friday afternoon, Friday morning for some of you listening. And we'll just, you know, we can talk about whatever you want, but I really want to finish just kind of nailing this thing down. 1-866-889-8894 if you would like to be on the radio program here today. And Mike in Orlando's on the line. Hey, Mike, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. Oh, I'm sorry. That's Vin in Santa Fe. I got my lines wrong. Right?
Yeah. Hey, Tom.
Hey Vin. How you doing?
Thanks. It's a perfect lead into what I wanted to say.
Okay.
It's unfortunate that Bernie's not on, because I really wanted to ask him about what he knew about shortfalls in campaign financing.
Next week.
Yeah, well, I'll have to come back to it. But your point about Iraq, I think the way Richard Clark put it on 60 Minutes was it was like Franklin Roosevelt invading Mexico after Pearl Harbor.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think there's one. I don't know if you read Bob Herbert's column in Today's Times.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, and he cited one particular passage that really captures it, I think, where Clark says he expected to go back on September 12th to a discussion of vulnerabilities after the September 11th attacks and what the next moves would be against al-Qaeda. And then he says he realized with almost a sharp physical pain that Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz were going to try and take advantage of this national tragedy to promote their agenda about Iraq.
Right, which they had first laid out in 1998 in an open letter from the Project for a New American Century to George Bush, which was signed by these guys along with Jeb Bush. They've made no secret of what they were doing. Did you see the fluff piece on Rumsfeld last night that ABC News did?
No, I didn't. I'm sorry.
Don Rumsfeld's Rules of War. It was pathetic. It was.
What's also pathetic is that the right wingers, the right wing talk spinners, are basically bringing on people to say that, I forget the gentleman's name, that I think Michael Reagan had him on yesterday, and I tuned in on my way back. You know, I just want to see what they're saying once in a while. That basically Clinton destroyed our security, and that this guy said Bush was too much of a gentleman to say what he had inherited from Clinton.
Yeah, right.
This is the defenses they're putting up for Bush.
Yeah, leave it to the attack dogs. Yeah, it is. And it's really rather pathetic fundamentally. Vin, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom.
1-866-889-8894, and now Dave, let's see, line two is Mike. Okay, now we're back to Mike in Orlando. Hey, Mike.
Afternoon, Tom.
How are you?
All right. When I was editing your program yesterday.
It's Mike Toth.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good.
You said yesterday when you were talking about when he was sitting in a classroom, to give George a little credit, he might have thought it was a tragic airline accident. And I just wanted to go through a few things he said in some of his speeches. One was directly after 9/11 that evening.
Okay.
He said, immediately following the first attack, I implemented our government's emergency response plans.
Well, it turns out that we know that wasn't the case. Wasn't it General Richard Myers who did that?
Well, I don't know that anybody... What do they define the first attack?
Well, presumably the hitting of the first tower.
Right. I mean, he sat there.
I know the reality is that, and this has just been exposed in the last few weeks, that George Bush didn't give any orders, nor did Vice President Cheney, about what to do, that it was done by, I believe it was General Richard Myers. It was one of the generals who was at the Pentagon. It wasn't Rumsfeld even, who basically put us on alert, who put the, who cranked up the military and said, there's something going on here we've got to respond to.
So he's saying he implemented the emergency response plan.
Right, and he did not. He did not.
Well, unless this is the response plans, which is sitting there, because in Orlando on December 4th, 2001, and you can't say that he thought it was just a tragic airline accident when he said that Andrew Card whispered in his ear, America is under attack.
Is that's what he said Andrew Card whispered in his ear?
Yes.
America's under attack, and then he continued to sit there with a classroom full of kids?
Orlando, Florida, December 4th, 2001.
Yeah, I know you live there. Yeah.
California, January 5th, 2002. The exact same thing. And on the first time in Florida, he said it must have been a horrible accident. That's after he saw the first one. When Andrew Card said America was under attack, this is what was going through his head. Now, I grew up in a period of time where the idea of America being under attack never entered my mind. Well, I thought he grew up during the Cold War, so
he wasn't thinking a lot. He's just a little bit older than I am, and I remember duck and cover.
Yeah.
I remember the bells going off and diving under the desk and putting your hands. They taught us how to hold your hands and fingers so that you could you could put your thumbs in your ears and you could cover your eyes with your fingers so that when the nuclear blast went off, it wouldn't blow out your eardrums and the bright flash wouldn't blind you. They taught, when I was in first grade, they taught us this. And we did this, I don't know, 5, 6, 8, 10 times a year. The bell would go off, and we'd all dive under our desks.
In Orlando, he went on to say, I started thinking hard in that very brief period of time about what it meant to be under attack. In California, the same thing. I was thinking about what it meant for America to be under attack. It was an amazing thought. Now, my question would be, why isn't the Secret Service or somebody brought in for questioning as to the procedure when America is under attack? The safety of those children were at harm right there, because if America is under attack, the president is at risk, and therefore anyone around him, to me, is at risk.
Yeah, although, keep in mind that a month earlier, the president on August 6th had gotten a national security briefing saying that there was these hijackers, these airplanes, Al-Qaeda, and that it might well have to do with targets in Washington, D.C., Now, of course, George Bush now is saying, he's parsing his words very carefully right now, Mike. Listen to this.
George Tenet briefed me on a regular basis about the terrorist threats to the United States of America. And had my administration had any information that terrorists were going to attack New York City on September 11th, we would have acted.
Yeah. Well... Here's a couple of facts about that. Number one, on August 6, 2001, President Bush personally, quote, this from NBC, received a one-and-a-half-page briefing advising him that Osama bin Laden was capable of a major strike against the U.S. and that the plot could involve the hijacking of an American airplane, end quote, from NBC News 91002. Fact, U.S. and Italian officials, this from the Los Angeles Times, 92701, U.S. and Italian officials were warned in July of 2001 that Islamic terrorists had considered, quote, crashing an airliner into the Genoa summit of industrialized nations, end quote. Fact, this from CBS News, May 17, 02, a 1999 report prepared by the Library of Congress for the National Intelligence Council, which certainly, you know, you would think that the head of the head of our government would know about, warned that Osama bin Laden's terrorists could hijack an airliner and fly it into government buildings like the Pentagon. The report specifically said, and I quote from the report from the National Intelligence Council, quote, suicide bombers belonging to Al-Qaeda's martyrdom battalion could crash land an aircraft packed with high explosives into the Pentagon, the headquarters of the CIA, or the White House. Now, that said, listen again to what George Bush said day before yesterday.
And had my administration had any information that terrorists were going to attack
New York City,
we would have acted.
Yeah, no, but they did have information that they're going to attack Washington, D.C., and that's why, Mike, I don't think that he jumped out of the chair in Florida, because he knew
that
Washington was under attack, not Florida.
That doesn't seem to be up to him, though. I would think the Secret Service has a protocol, since they have no clue of what's going on.
Yeah, you would think.
We don't have what's going on. We have a protocol to get him out of harm's way, as well as those around him out of harm's way.
Yeah, you would think. You would think. But I think right now what these guys are doing is this whole administration's running around like Daffy
Duck. Now what am I going to do?
You know? Yeah. So, anyway, you were saying. Sorry.
Just given that, I mean, has that changed your mind a little about what you think, giving him some credit about the tragic airline accident? I mean, he was a pilot.
Yeah. No, if you're asking me to recant something I said, I'd have to go, fine. You know, I don't remember the context, frankly.
Yeah. No, it was just somebody was mentioning after Andy Card whispered in his ear, and that's what you said. You wanted to give him some credit that what maybe he thought it was a tragic airline accident.
Yeah, and I frankly, I didn't remember, or maybe I never even knew that Andy Card said America's under attack. So.
Yeah, I've seen the video and I've printed up both of the speeches.
I believe you, Mike. I know you're a good detailed guy, and I appreciate the archives that you put together for our site there at tomhartman.com of previous shows. So
I hope people are taking advantage of them.
I think they are. Thanks for the call, and I appreciate
it. You take
care. Good to hear from you, Michael. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. And Dave in Humboldt County is on the line. Hey, Dave, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Good morning, Tom. I may have to call you back. My phone is beeping telling me that the battery's low. But I find myself left with a lot of questions. One, that it appears in a way that the war is sort of being privatized. And that I ask myself, is it purely coincidence that so much of the federal money is being routed through some very wealthy corporate interests over there, allies, friends, colleagues of Cheney primarily? Is it purely a byproduct of this war that there's some people getting very rich?
Yeah, I mean, when you consider that the entire welfare budget for the United States is around $40, $45 billion, and we've spent, over $150 billion just in Iraq, And the primary beneficiaries of those have been a handful of corporations who are very substantial and significant campaign donors to the Bush administration. And, of course, Dick Cheney still owns over 300,000 shares of or options of Halliburton, which go up in value every day. It's war profiteering. Abraham Lincoln was just outraged. George Washington spoke about war profiteers and how they should be considered criminals.
It certainly leaves at least the question that is this just a byproduct? Is this just a coincidence that they're getting very rich? Because one of the other things that came up with this Clark interview is the question he was asked of why, when all the planes in the country were grounded, was one plane allowed to take off flying to Saudi Arabia for the people? And it leaves a question. It leaves a question like why does somebody not want to testify under oath? You know, it's like,
Yeah.
A lot of questions.
Well, I think, you know, frankly, Dave, I number one, I don't think it's a coincidence. And number two, I don't think it's a conspiracy. I think it is the whole cloth of the conservative worldview, which says that privatization is the better way to do things. And what a nice kind of secondary benefit that these corporations that support these politicians are benefiting from the war. But I don't think that they started the war to make money for the corporations.
Well, isn't it a coincidence that there's an awful lot of oil in Iraq?
Yeah. Now, that's a bigger one. Thanks a lot, Dave, for the call. We got a boogie. Tom Hartman here, 10 minutes before the hour.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Scientists in Wisconsin are helping keep pests and pesticides out of public schools. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Parents don't want insects, rodents, or mold in their children's schools, but they don't want pesticides either.
And of course, in a confined space like that, the pesticides really have nowhere to go, and they are not subject to the natural degradation processes such as sunlight, rainfall, and the microbes that degrade them outside.
That's John Steer, a horticulturist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He says schools have an alternative to pesticides, integrated pest management, or IPM. The idea is to fight pests with tactics other than chemicals. That can mean controlling temperature and moisture, eliminating food sources, and even using a pest's natural enemies to fight it. Steer and his colleagues have developed training programs to educate schools on safer, more effective pest management.
Many of the school personnel that take care of the buildings and grounds were hired for their janitorial skills or their heating and air conditioning skills. They've never had any exposure or any experience managing pests before. And then their first day of work, they're told, by the way, you have to manage the football fields and the grounds around campus. these people have never had any training. So that we find that when we provide them with a day of training on turf management, pest management, landscape management, they're easily able to implement IPM practices.
Steer says integrated pest management keeps poisonous chemicals away from kids and usually saves school districts money. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
The Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Especially the politicians.
Look at all the money we've saved.
Yes, indeed. Look, hey, just invest a few million with the Bush campaign. You can make billions. Just ask Halliburton. The State Department, by the way, officially released its annual terrorism report just a little more than a few hours ago. This was yesterday. Okay, yesterday, the State Department released its annual terrorism report. Unlike last year, there's no extensive mention of alleged terrorist mastermind Osama bin Laden. No extensive mention of bin Laden in the State Department terrorism report? Well, they don't want to focus on him because it's been 902 days since we said we were going to get him any day now. Wouldn't you say? 3 minutes before the hour, John in Eureka, California is on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello, Tom. I wanted to ask you, I know you've written a lot about cognitive functions and how people think and learn. And in George Bush's case, he doesn't read by his own admission and he doesn't write. And but he must have some kind of intelligence to arrive at where he is. I mean, how
I think
does he characterize it?
I think, you know,
diagnosis,
if
how yeah. do you think his mind functions?
If you go back to Howard Gardner's, you know, the work on the seven right. intelligences, and of course there's more than seven, but, you know, Howard started the thing. You know, some people are really, really, they can be geniuses socially, interpersonally. Other people are geniuses athletically. Some people are geniuses artistically. Some people are geniuses mathematically. The IQ tests only measure very, very narrow range of cognitive function, of mental ability.
Right.
George Bush is not particularly literate by his own admission, as you said. He's not particularly articulate, as anybody who listens to him can tell. I mean, just in the last 6 months or so, the networks have stopped editing out his ahs and ums that they did for the first year and a half after 9/11 as a courtesy to the White House.
So it's not language strength, and it's
I think he has interpersonal strength. I think it's social strength. You read some of the biographies. I mean, some of the unflattering biographies about him, and they go at length about how, you know, he actually can make people feel very loyal to him. I think he has strong interpersonal strengths. And that's the key to it. But, you know, who knows? I don't know him personally, so that's just a guess. John, thanks for the call.
We'll find out after he's out of office.
Yeah, we will, won't we? But he'll still have his daddy to back him up. Thanks a lot, John, for the call. Great to hear from you. 2 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Transforming the world by revitalizing democracy.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse-
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. U.S. soldiers in Iraq were plagued by low morale, experienced spikes in suicides last July and November, and lacked access to some medications sought by military mental health specialists to treat emotional problems, Army experts reported on Thursday. A 12-person Army mental health advisory team issued a 38-page report on issues faced by U.S. soldiers in Iraq, including suicide, combat stress, and the availability of help from the Army. The team traveled to Iraq from August to October 2003 and interviewed almost 760 soldiers. The report found a significant proportion of soldiers experienced and reported behavioral health concerns and that there was an unmet need for behavioral services. Trying to blunt allegations the Bush administration mishandled terror threats before September 11th, the White House is offering to let George W. Bush's top national security aide meet privately for a second time with a federal panel investigating the terrorist attacks. The offer comes amid a continued effort by the White House to discredit former counterterrorism chief Richard Clark, a tactic that is beginning to show signs of backfiring. Senate Democratic leader Tom Daschle joined the fray, accusing the administration of character assassination against Clark. Questions have been raised as to why Rice has appeared on numerous television programs over the past few days, yet still refuses to testify publicly in front of the 9/11 Commission. John Curry, promising to create 10 million jobs and keep them in America, has announced a proposal to cut corporate taxes by 5% and eliminate tax loopholes that push jobs overseas. The Democratic presidential nominee-in-waiting said he would fight a reluctant Congress and special interests to carry out the most far-reaching changes in international corporate tax law in four decades. Kerry overrode the objections of some advisors who opposed the corporate tax cut on political grounds. More Minuteman News after this.
I'm Oscar Davis. You may have a serious eye condition and not even know it. Vision loss is not a normal part of aging. Some vision changes are normal. Some are due to eye disease. Do you know the difference? Open your eyes to the facts. To get more information about vision and aging, or find out about what help is available if you're having vision problems, call Lighthouse International at 1-800-829-0500 or visit www.lighthouse.org.
A German woman's joy at the recovery of her missing handbag quickly turned to sorrow after she sped drunk to the police station to fetch it and had her driver's license confiscated, authorities said Thursday. She was so happy to hear about the bag, she jumped straight into the car and came down to get it, said a spokesman. The thing is, we saw her coming. She'd had a lot to drink. The 38-year-old parked in front of the police station but failed to hide the fact that she was inebriated from officers. The first thing she got out of the bag was her license, which we took, along with her car keys, said a spokesman. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Let me tell you a story of progressive progress. In 1939, two-thirds of America's senior citizens lived their golden years in cold, hard poverty. Just a decade later, that percentage was down to half. By 1959, it was only one-third, and today the number is less than 10%. That's progress. What's progressive about it is that this decline in poverty is the result of the New Deal's passage of our nation's landmark Social Security program. Yes, the very same program now under attack by Wall Street wolves and congressional opportunists of both parties who insist that Social Security is doomed to failure and facing an imminent financial crisis. Horse duties. First, this is a program that actually works, providing the modicum of income so our gray-haired citizens have a basic level of decent living when their earning years are over. Second, Social Security is a model of efficiency, requiring only a single percent in administrative costs. Compare that to the insurance corporations that suck out one-third of our health care dollars to pay for their corporate bureaucracies, executive salaries, marble palaces, and advertising. But no, cry the chicken littlers, Social Security is going broke. Hogwash. Without changing anything, Social Security is financially sound for the next 40 years. Name me a corporation that can claim that. Yet the Bushites, on behalf of Wall Street finaglers, seek to privatize this public treasure, pushing people to put their Social Security nest egg into the stock market. Hello? These are the same investment geniuses who only 3 years ago would have advised you to invest in Enron, a stock that fell from $97 a share to 57 cents in only 1 year. This is Jim Hightower saying, I say no one should be allowed to reform Social Security unless they actually need it.
Wow, that's hot.
I think it's cool.
Can't that be definitely hot?
I don't see it that way.
I forgot. You're more right brain.
Right. 24 prints a minute. That's cool.
In black and white or color?
Cool.
For under $1,000.
Cool.
From Xerox?
Really cool.
Sorry, 24 color pages a minute is nothing but hot.
You think anything that's fast is hot?
That's cold.
The new Xerox Phaser 8400, the world's fastest office color printer for under $1,000. To find out how
cool,
hot it really is, visit Xerox.com/office.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Friday afternoon here. This is the second hour of Friday where regularly we have Congressman Bernie Sanders on. Bernie, however, this is one of those days where events conspired against us, and Bernie is in an airplane as we speak, somewhere between Washington, D.C. and Burlington, Vermont. So he won't be on the program today. He'll be back next Friday. 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to be on the program, we've got a lot we can talk about here. We've also got a few calls stacked up, so let's just start out with Charles in San Diego. Hey, Charles, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello, I'm listening to you on the Internet.
Oh, great.
Come down here.
On RadioPower.org.
Right. Anyway, my subject had to deal with the Michael Newdow case that was being that was heard at the Supreme Court and probably will be accepted and agreed upon.
This is the pledge case, you mean?
The pledge case.
Yeah.
You know, basically, it's ruling against the act of Congress that changed the pledge instead of the pledge itself, my understanding of the case.
Yeah.
People tend to ignore.
Yeah, it gets completely lost in the stampede.
But what I want to do is make sure that the listeners knew, and it just seems all these right-wing radios always seem to lie. They seem to say that the prayer in public school is illegal now and that your kids can't say the Pledge of Allegiance.
No, it's,
they can't.
It's perfectly legal to pray in a public school.
Again?
It's perfectly legal to pray in a public school.
It's always been legal for your children to, if they wanted to, at lunch, during class, as long as they're not, like, praying, oh, God, please let the answer to be to question
well,
one be out loud. They can't be saying stuff like that.
They can even say that. I'm just not sure
no,
it's going to get them very far.
With the process of the school. That's all. It's the same. It's
no, the kids can actually pray in a way that interferes with the process of the school. They just can't do it in a way that is sponsored or directed by the school. That's why they stopped prayer at, for example, before basketball games.
Right, because then...
Because it was the school supervising it, right. But if a kid sitting in a classroom spontaneously says, you know, dear God, please help me figure out the answer to question six, there's no way, no, number one, there's no practical way a teacher could stop them. Number two, it's not illegal. It's perfectly legal.
During a test, that's all.
Yeah, it's speaking during a test, but I mean, you know, they kids can pray in school. In fact, schools, you know, schools can even say, we're going to have a moment of silence. And, you know, those of you who are Zen Buddhists can, you know, can just sit here in the empty. And those of you who are Christians or Jews or Muslims or whatever, you can pray if you want. You know, yes, you're right. And it's one of the great lies of the right wing. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
And they forget the two other issues. One, a lot of these cases that have been brought to the court concerning school prayer were brought about by Jewish families and Catholic families because they felt their religious beliefs were being infringed upon. Whereas we always like to say atheists because atheists don't believe in God. But it was actually these religious families who have a very deep spiritual belief and how their children are raised have in their spiritual well-being.
Yeah, that
they felt that was being infringed upon.
That was in particular
on radio because that makes it sound like the Christians are trying to just convert Jews and Catholics.
Yeah,
their own line of thinking.
In particular, that goes back to that case a couple of years ago that had to do with nativity scenes in schools. But then the right wingers take that and set it up for anti-Semitism. You know, it gets weirder and weirder. But
all right.
Anyhow,
so I'm glad I'm glad about your show, and I'm glad that Air America is coming out next week.
Yep. We wish them well.
Line up, but.
Yeah, we wish them well.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks for calling, Charles. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. 10 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program here with you. Hey, you know, here's Hamas. You know, Israel. And no slip of the tongue intended there. I realize there's a close relationship. Anyhow, Israel assassinated the leader of Hamas last week. Sheikh, what's his name? And now they got this new guy. And he's, you know, he said, well, no, we're not actually going to attack America, but look out. Ariel Sharon is now on our sights. But the interesting thing that I think gets missed in the reporting of all this is that Hamas basically runs the Gaza Strip. Yeah, they, you know, the Palestinian Authority says that they're the government and all that kind of thing. But Hamas really runs it. And why? Because they run free schools. They run free hospitals. They run free food, you know, soup kitchen kind of things. They run social services. They actually, you know, they run orphanages. And they have shelters for, you know, abused kids and abused women. And they offer transportation to people. They actually have a service, you know. Like, and I'm not saying this to say Hamas is wonderful, because I think that they're a bunch of crazed thugs, frankly. But the point is, if you want to win the hearts and minds of the people, and you think you're going to do that with guns and bombs and sanctions and threats, all you need to do is look at Hamas and see, you know, here's how you do it. It's not rocket science. Give people what they need, and they will be loyal to you. And, you know, why that is missed. It really reminds me sometimes of the old feudal days. I mean, read the history of Europe, and you go back into the Middle Ages. You know, the period basically from the end of the Roman conquest around 5-600 AD up until the Enlightenment and the Renaissance, the 14th, 15th centuries. And these local kings, I mean, some nations actually had declared kings, but really the power was more decentralized. There were all these little local kings or local feudal lords, and they would always have a war going on with the guy next door. It was the Hatfields and the McCoys. And they did it very cynically and very intentionally, because they knew that if they could keep a war going on, it would keep the people distracted. It would keep the people giving them taxes. It would cause the people to want to help them build the castle bigger and fancier and stronger, because if they really got attacked by the other side, the castle was the place of refuge. And it was basically exploiting the peasants. Yeah, so anyhow, put that in your bio computer. Think about that, and as you look at the world, as you notice what's going on in the world. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Claire in Los Angeles is on the line. Hey, Claire, welcome to the program.
Hi, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was listening to Ian Williams, who I guess is the Middle East correspondent of The Nation.
Uh-huh.
And he was saying this morning on Radio Nation that he's not sure Sharon wants peace, and he deliberately attacked the Sheikh in order to destabilize the whole thing.
Oh, I don't think Sharon has ever wanted peace. I mean, you go back to the, you know, Sharon's attacks that were documented by the U.S. spy ship. I forget the name of it, but the National Security Agency. Yeah. Was it the Liberty?
No, that was in 1967.
Okay, the National Security Agency had a spy ship off the coast there, and Sharon was apparently directing an illegal execution of a couple hundred people, a slaughter, and we documented it, and boom, Israel attacks the ship, and this is
that was Liberty, in 1967.
Yeah, the USS Liberty.
Yeah.
That was
cover up.
Yeah,
and Johnson.
Right. Yeah, yeah, and that was Sharon, I. But I don't want to get into, Middle Eastern politics too deeply here.
Well, I just wanted to say, because I called a few weeks ago, and I said, we were talking about the war being partially because of Israel's control over the U.S., and so I just wanted to come back with some facts that have been recently exposed. For one thing, Karen Kotowski, who is a retired lieutenant,
I'm listening.
In the Air Force, mm-hmm. She was working in the Near East and South Asia desk at the Pentagon, so she was working under Bill Luty. And working directly next to Doug Feith's office. Now, she's a very reputable person. She has 2 degrees from Harvard. Anyway, she was talking about how Ahmed Chalabi, the INC,
right,
was working with Doug Feith, right, who was, I think his title was Undersecretary of Defense.
Right.
And
Feith works for Rumsfeld.
Plans.
Yeah.
And she was talking about how Israeli agents would go in and out of there. And she published this in Salon under the new Pentagon Papers.
Yeah, I understand all that. But do you think that Israel was the only country that was sending agents into the Office of Special Plans?
Well, yes. In fact, in terms of that, yes. She never had to follow standard procedures for checking people in and out. And the other thing is, in Haaretz, which is an Israeli paper,
Hold on just a second, Claire. Let me just, I'm not saying that you're necessarily wrong here, but Israel is is the only democracy in the Middle East.
It's not a democracy. Anyone who calls it a democracy doesn't know anything about that country. Arabs have much less rights. Ethiopian Jews have much less rights. You cannot call Israel a democracy. It was established as a Jewish nation, a Jewish state.
Yeah.
It's not a democracy.
Claire, I'm sorry. I've been there, and I consider it a democracy. It meets my criteria of democracy. Apparently, that's different from yours. 1-866-889-8894. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Todd in Arcata, California, is on the line. Hey, Todd, what's up?
Oh, let me quote Howard Beale. Woe is us. We're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
I was searching the news this morning, and I found something that was quite disturbing. Evidently, Bush was at press dinner. They have annual toast to the president.
Yeah.
Last night, and maybe you talked about this. I only caught about half the show, but evidently he was showing a slideshow with him looking out the window, looking under furniture.
Yeah, I talked about it in the first hour.
Okay.
And how tasteless it was.
Yeah, to me, we're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah,
and the media evidently, they were all sitting around laughing along with him. So.
Yeah, we absolutely are. And thank you for bringing up Howard Beale. It provides a perfect segue. Here he is.
You've got to say, I'm a human being. My life has value.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
There you go, Howard Beale from Network.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Time for us all to say that collectively, yeah. And I think America's getting ready to. Thanks a lot for the call.
Yeah.
Okay, Tom Hartman here with you, 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. And Jim in Lansing, Michigan's on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, Tom. Well, I guess the Republicans, I guess they're scared to death. Richard Clark has them squirming.
Well, they're resorting to character assassination to get their way. Well, I mean, it looks like they don't have much left.
They are in
and lies.
Full attack mode.
Yeah.
I understand that they're trying to get some papers released from some testimony he gave in 2002 about the attacks. And they're going to compare those notes to his testimony in front of the 9/11 Commission to see if he's lied.
Yeah, this was the backgrounder that he gave to the press at the request of the president.
This is something else.
Oh, this is something else? Okay.
This is testimony, something else.
Oh, this is something else? Okay.
This is testimony that he gave in front of Congress or Senate.
I see.
Did this in, I think, 2002.
Yeah.
And they're wanting to compare notes to see if the man has lied under oath.
Yeah.
And, you know, another thing, you know, these four books, Clark's book, O'Neill, Bob Woodward's book, and
which a lot of people have forgotten about, you know, the Bush at War.
They all mention, I think, 2002.
Yeah.
And they're wanting to compare notes to see if the man has lied under oath.
Yeah.
And, you know, another thing, you know, these four books, Clark's book, O'Neill, Bob Woodward's book, and
which a lot of people have forgotten about, you know, the Bush at War.
They all mention that this administration wanted to go to war.
It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org. Or call 215-563-7110.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Where, unlike anything else on the market, Carbo Blocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of
conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Hi, this is Emily Richards for RAD, Recording Artists, Actors, and Athletes Against Drunk Driving. One person's negligence shattered my life in a single instant. You see, my little sister Annie was killed by a drunk driver. Please remember those you love. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the TuneTracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the TuneTracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface, and only $149.95 for the original TuneTracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Comes
Yes, the White House, why? They want to send your kids to die. They'll just look at you and lie. Extraordinary. Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman. Tom Hartman radio program, 25 minutes past the hour. And let's see here. Billy in Santa Cruz, California is on the line. Hey, Billy.
Hey, Tom.
How you doing?
I'm great. So, Tom, let's move forward. We discussed yesterday what little character the people of the Bush religion have. You know, you're talking about genius, and my particular genius is for hearing people talk and understanding how they've crafted their sentences.
Yeah, you know, by the way, somebody called during one of the breaks and said, you know, you really ought to need to point out that George Bush is dyslexic, and that's why he doesn't read. You know, I'm willing to give him that.
I'm not willing to give him anything, but that's
anyway,
fine.
Yeah.
You know, the fact is that he's a totally failed president, and just a quick line about that, and then I'll get back to where I was. You know, every time they bring up, if they have to talk about Clinton, if the best they can say about the fact that Bush failed to protect us from terrorism is, well, then so did Clinton, you lose. They lose.
Yeah, and, they're trying, but they're trying it anyway.
Another fail, you know.
Yeah, but they're trying it anyway.
Yeah, yeah. So here's the line Bush uses. He said, had I known that airplanes were going to be used. Had I known.
Right, and then he says specifically on New York on November 11th.
Yeah, exactly. So. And, you know, that's the Republican version of what the meaning of is.
Yeah.
And here's the real truth, and I said it at the time, and I'm going to say it again so people just know it. The airline business was in desperate trouble in America before 9/11. It was on its own failing. Headed for bankruptcy.
Right.
U.S. Air, United, both were headed for bankruptcy, at least. Southwest is a healthy airline. Well, if you were the president and you were told directly airplanes would be used as weapons, there will be a hijacking within the next month, and you were looking at a failing economy, a very failing airline business, you think you would go on and say, hey, folks, be careful, there's going to be an airline thing, or are you, again, like the mayor of Amity, Massachusetts, that when the shark comes, you don't dare tell the public because it will ruin your summer.
Yeah. Well, it's not outside the bounds of possibility, Billy, that George Bush didn't want to harm the airline industry by issuing a warning that there was, in his mind, a possibility, whether he thought it was a 5% or a 95% possibility, that airplanes would be hijacked by terrorists. But he could have. But what he could have done is he could have increased the security at the airports without saying anything to anybody, and that would not have hurt business.
You know, that's a good point. However, what he should have done was all those things.
Sure.
You know, let us decide. Again, you know,
that's what John Ashcroft did. John Ashcroft said, I ain't flying on no commercial airlines. Forget it.
Yeah, so in other words, the Bush administration has information they keep to themselves, they protect themselves, and we're at risk with them.
Yeah.
And that's the story about being anything with the Bushes.
Yeah,
everything we value.
And this is the guy who's selling himself to us in this presidential election as the holder of the security of America. He's the guy. He's the war president. Billy, thanks for your call. Thanks for your comments. As always, on point. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Is the Bush administration pre-spinning the next attack on America? Stick around.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Pyrrhic victory for opponents to a Department of Labor plan to increase overtime pay exemptions. Democrats in the U.S. Senate managed to amend a trade and tax bill with a provision that would stop the department from cutting off OT to as many as 8 million people. Efforts to remove the provision from the bill have failed, but instead of keeping debate alive on the issue, Senate Republicans yesterday pulled the legislation from the floor. This leaves the Department of Labor free to move forward with the overtime massacre, and it's scheduled to go down on Tuesday.
15 years ago this month, an Exxon Valdez oil tanker hit a reef off the coast of Alaska, spilling millions of gallons of oil into the ocean, devastating local wildlife and communities depending on these now contaminated natural resources for survival. Hundreds of workers who were employed by Exxon as part of the toxic cleanup are now getting sick, and Alaska Community Action on Toxics members are asking the federal government to add more than $100 million to the $900 million settlement it reached with Exxon in 1991. Many workers like Phyllis LeJoe suffer from respiratory trouble, neurological impairment, liver disease, and skeletal deterioration.
I now have emphysema, asthma, multiple allergies, chemical sensitivities, and I also developed diabetes. I'm a mess, let's put it that way. The papers were full of articles about dead animals, but I never saw one report in any newspaper of any of my friends.
Exxon denies any responsibility for the workers' illnesses, suggesting these people could have been exposed to crude oil chemicals elsewhere. It's unclear as to whether Senator Tom Stevens will support the reopener request.
6,500 part-time workers at Walt Disney World have their first union contract. It raises their minimum wage, implements a grievance process, and awards seniority benefits to part-timers. The workers ratified the deal on Wednesday. It took more than a year for the company to recognize the union and seriously negotiate the new contract. Now Disney World turns its attention to negotiations with more than 25,000 full-time union workers at the park whose contract expires in May.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 93 years ago this week, the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory in New York City caught fire. 146 mostly young immigrant women burnt alive because the owner had locked them in the factory. The disaster led to the creation of a series of state laws that dramatically improved safety conditions within factories. Yet fires and explosions are still a workplace hazard. The Department of Labor says fires and explosions killed more than 600 people in the last 5 years.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. Exposing the con and conservative. It's Tom Hartman here with you. Terrorists, this is the Associated Press. Terrorists could attempt to influence the outcome of this year's presidential election by launching attacks in America and overseas, says FBI Director Robert Mueller yesterday. He said, in the wake of what happened in Madrid, we have to be concerned about the possibility of terrorists attempting to influence elections in the United States by committing a terrorist act. Is this pre-attack spin? They looked at the situation in Spain and they said, oh, gee, the Spanish government lied to its people, went to war in Iraq, supporting the United States, in defiance of 90% public opinion against the war, lied to its people about the war, lied to its people about the weapons of mass destruction, collaborated with an ally who lied to its people, that is us, the United States. And then a terrorist bombing happened and they tried to spin that. Oh, it's ETA, it's the Basques. And they lost. They got thrown out on their butts. So, is this administration, by sending out the FBI director yesterday to say, You know, hey, you got to, in the wake of what happened in Madrid, we have to be concerned about the possibilities of terrorists attempting to influence elections. Planting the seed, planting the thought virus, the mental germ in all of us that if terrorists attack, they're trying to help John Kerry. I guarantee you, that's the right-wing spin on this thing, and they're going to try and do it in a sufficiently subtle fashion that they can kind of slide it into people's brains without them realizing that it's there, so that if there is a terrorist attack, the immediate, automatic, unconscious response is going to be, oh, my God, it must be that these guys really don't want George Bush to be president. They're trying to do the same thing that happened in Spain. We can't let them get away with it. This is like, you know, reverse psychological warfare at its most elegant. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Alfred in Wyoming, Michigan's on the line. Hey, Alfred, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, Tom, I don't know whether it hits the wire system, but since you're from here originally, the Grand Rapids Press last Tuesday put this in Section D out of four sections on page one. Two Albanian immigrants tried to sneak across the border.
Which border?
Pardon me?
Which border?
Oh, from Windsor.
Into the United States.
They paid a smuggler to smuggle them across, and things got fouled up, and they ended up in Holland, Michigan, 15 to 16 hours later. And Saturday afternoon, through the cries of people, notified 911 and found that these people couldn't get out of the boxcar. They ended up in Holland, Michigan, and they're illegal aliens. But I was thinking our borders are protected so well, according to George, that how could these two Albanians sneak in, get all the way across Michigan, undetected, and end up in Holland, Michigan?
It's a joke. It's an absolute joke.
But I don't know whether it hit the wire services or.
No, I haven't seen that. But thanks for sharing it. I mean, you know, this is the same thing that's happening in with Mexico. I mean, if a terrorist somebody of Middle Eastern ancestry who's somewhat darker skin than you know European American ancestry, if they wanted to sneak into the United States. Go down to Mexico and learn some Spanish and come in. You know, I hope that isn't interpreted as a racist comment. It's just a simple reality that you know we have some borders that are very porous and some borders that are not. And I think that somebody with dark skin trying to come into the United States through the Canadian border is going to be very conspicuous, but trying to come into the United States through the southern border is not going to be quite so conspicuous. So there's that, you know, I mean, what's being done about protecting our, well, you've got to keep in mind that the big agricultural corporations in California need immigrant labor. You know, they need people who are willing to work for $2, $3 an hour.
According to the authorities over in Holland, these two people tried to visit relatives in New York and had come illegally into Canada through Montreal.
Yeah. Well, there's
a
problem, too.
They were way to Windsor and then paid somebody to smuggle them to Detroit where they were supposed to get out of the boxcar.
Yeah, and then the even larger issue is the fact that only 2% of the containers coming into the United States are inspected, seriously inspected. And it would only cost, according to the Congressional Budget Office, a study that was done by Congress, it would cost between $6 and $8 billion. Now, keep in mind, again, all of the money that we spend on welfare for human beings in the United States is about $40 to $45 billion. But it would cost $6 to $8 billion for us to put inspectors all around the world to inspect cargoes before they left their port departure to come to the United States, so that it was like pre-inspected before it even got here. And the Bush administration says, "No, we can't spend that money. We've got to give tax cuts to the wealthy." I'm sorry.
Do you think their excuse will be when we have another tragic episode like in New York or similar to that?
It up right now. Their excuse is going to be these guys are trying to influence the elections. They just want you to vote for the Democrats. Don't let them get away with it. That's what they're going to say. That's what Robert Mueller said yesterday, in essence. I mean, that's the message behind the message. Look at what's really being said here. Alfred, thanks for sharing that.
Yep.
Thanks for pointing it out. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you there in Wyoming, Michigan. 1-866-889-8894. Kim in Flagstaff, Arizona is on the line. Hey, Kim, welcome to the show. What's up?
I listened a little bit to Bush's speech this morning.
I missed
you
it.
There?
Yeah, I am. I missed it. What did he say?
And the first thing he did was start talking about the economy and how it was going down in 1999 and 2000.
Yeah, and it wasn't.
Of course, he forgets, because I'm a trucker, and in 1999, mid-year, in 2000, we were getting spiked with oil prices.
Yeah.
And it shut down truckers. California had brownouts. Corporations were screaming. It was taking all their profits.
Yeah.
And people were screaming because their air conditioning bills, their heating bills, their fuel bills were just going through the ceiling, and they didn't have any money.
Yeah, well, and also, if you go back and you look at the actual statistics, the recession, quote unquote, officially started in March of 2001, three months after George Bush was sworn into office. It was not the Clinton recession. I'm sorry. Yes, there was a stock market bubble, that burst. That's the stock market is not the U.S. economy. It's a good way to measure. It's a good way to measure the health of the wealthy.
All the money trade on the stock market is like gambling in the casino.
Yeah, and it's really a very small piece of the United States economy, a very small piece of it.
And one other thing, he was talking about, and of course you took my bubble away from me when you started talking about the threat of the attack is going to be, influence our vote. If anything, you've already said this, but, it's going to give it to right to Bush. Everybody knows that.
Well, but if they set it up right, I mean, that's the thing. See, if Bush comes out of this thing with Clark as being seen as an ineffectual leader who failed to protect the country, and ever since 9/11 has consistently failed to protect the country. I mean, you've got first responders, you've got police officers, police unions and departments all around the United States, fire departments and unions around the United States screaming that they are being, their funds are being cut, and the Bush administration's response is, hey, we've got to have tax cuts for the rich. I'm sorry, if we've got to stimulate the economy by giving more tax cuts to those wealthy people who are going to hire folks, so that those wealthy people then, of course, can invest their money overseas or can hire folks in China. But anyhow, I'm ranting.
You got it right there.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Kim. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. 17 minutes before the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. You're listening to live coast to coast, border to border, and all around the planet. Streaming live around the planet on radiopower.org, our listener-supported web radio station. Beaming down from outer space in the Sirius satellite, satellite radio system, and also, of course, on radio stations, literally, from California to North Carolina. 17 minutes before the hour, let's move along. Daryl in Cutlerville. Is that Cutlerville, California, Dave? Daryl?
No, that's Michigan.
Oh, in Michigan. Okay. Hey,
yes.
Welcome to the show.
But first time that I've heard your program, but I'm glad that I found it because I'm tired of all of the conservative crap.
Well, thank you, Daryl. Tell your friends.
Yes, absolutely.
And tell the advertisers, by the way. Anytime if you support a radio show, it's funny. When advertisers or radio stations hear from people complaining about shows, they think, oh well, they're listening. So that doesn't do much harm to a show. But when people call and say, hey, I listen to the show and I really like it and I'm going to buy your products, that dings a bell really loud. So anyhow.
Well, I agree, and I'll do that. This the whole issue here. Is exactly what you're saying. The Republican conservative right warmongers, that's all they know. And if they can't scare people into voting for them, then they have no chance.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is really a sad state, a sad commentary in the state of affairs in America. But what it is a demonstration, a very clear demonstration of the failure of the religion of conservatism. And, this is not just the Republican Party, and this is really not a partisan thing. This is this conservative worldview that Russell Kirk first articulated in 1953 in his book, The Conservative Mind, that then got William F. Buckley going and got Barry Goldwater going and just led to this whole thing of we have to have absolutely free markets. Well, they forget the fact that the market exists because governments authorize corporations. Markets exist because governments provide stable currencies. Markets exist because governments have court systems that allow people to enter into contracts with each other and enforce them. Governments corporations are you know, function because governments provide them with an educated workforce and streets that, you know, public rights of way that are paid for by you and me with our tax dollars, so that they can get, you know, their workers to work and the rights of way through which telephone lines and the internet are carried and protected by police and fire. And they completely ignore all this stuff and talk as if there's like this magic thing called the free market, which doesn't exist. It's a fantasy. There is certainly a marketplace, but the marketplace is like, it's like a hockey game. It's like you've got the game set. And you have a set of rules, and you can play the game in a way that is heavily skewed toward one team or the other. I mean, you can say, hey, this team has to, you know, this net is smaller than that net. Or you could say, we want to have a game with no rules at all. And that's this conservative religion of the so-called free market. And what it is doing is it's devastating not only the American economy, but economies all over the world. And then you add to that this bizarre notion that we have to reinvent the Roman Empire, that the only way to protect ourselves is to project our force all around the world and make the same mistake that I think Israel is making. It's nuts. I'm sorry, I went off on a rant there, but Daryl, I'll let you have the last word and wrap that one up.
Well, no, I agree with everything you're saying, and I don't think anyone is reasonably considers what George Bush did in Iraq was anything more than trying to make daddy not look so bad.
Do you think so? I mean, I
absolutely.
Yeah, you think that this was, you think he was trying to help his father's legacy, or do you think, on the other hand, I mean, there's a lot of people who think that he was trying to prove to mommy that he's stronger than daddy, that daddy didn't finish the job, but boy, George can do it.
Well, you know, I tell you what, I'm a psychologist, and I'm glad that you pointed that out because I hadn't thought of it that way, but I think that could be.
Yeah.
You know, he just is not. He's not a strong leader. He's a follower.
Yeah.
He follows Dick Cheney and everybody else. You know.
Yeah, and is this the result of some sort of distorted Oedipal complex? You know, or the male reverse of an Electra complex? We don't want to get too Freudian here. Daryl, thanks for the call. Good to
Thank
hear
you.
From you. Thanks for calling in. 1-866-889-8894. Our number, Phil in Palm Harbor, Florida, is on the line. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program.
Yes, hi. I want to reinforce what you said just moments ago. When I'm in the car, you don't have much of a choice. I was listening to Bill O'Reilly a couple of times.
Oh, you have my sympathy.
He's now banging the drum. Who would Osama bin Laden like to see president of the United States?
Yeah. So, and, of course, Osama would love to have George Bush as president of the United States because then he could continue to be the heroic warrior who has an anti-warrior against him.
But the way he says it is that they would, you know, he would much rather have John Kerry as president than tough George Bush.
Yeah.
Of course, he was able to go, you know, to get through George Bush's defenses and attack New York, and after, you know, 2 years, the guy's still free.
902 days it has been, Phil. This
yeah.
is day 902 in the search for Osama bin Laden.
But under the category of unintended consequences, you have right now, on a daily basis, a talk show host that has, 30 million listeners, Howard Stern, ragging on George Bush, encouraging his listeners to donate money to Kerry, encouraging his listeners to register and to vote against Bush.
Oh, and they are hustling as fast as they can to get him off the air.
Well, yes.
I mean, we're talking acts of Congress here.
But the point is,
after 25 years of doing the same show, all of a sudden Howard Stern is obscene.
Yeah, but the thing is that these people are people who listen to Howard Stern are avid fans of his, so to speak, much more than Rush Limbaugh's.
I don't know if that's true or not. But, you know,
to the extent that
but they're fans. I mean, you know, let's just say that
they're basically
fans.
Supported yeah. Bush until this all came down.
Yeah, I always thought Howard Stern was a conservative, frankly, because the few times that I have heard him, he's not in our market. But, you know, when I travel from time to time, I'll hear him in the morning, and he seems to be broadly supportive of conservative things. Anyway, Phil, we got about 20 seconds. Your final point.
Real quick. I think this could have a real impact because the former mayor of, or governor of New Jersey said his support of her helped her win the election.
Howard Stern's, yeah. Oh, yeah, it may. And for that matter, you know, Rush Limbaugh has taken credit for the election of Ronald Reagan and both George Bushes. And there's probably some truth to that, too. So
yep.
It'll be interesting to see how it all spins out. Phil, thanks for the call.
All right.
Good to hear from you. Tom Hartman program, 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned.
Delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
The rainforests of Africa might be in serious trouble if their gardeners go extinct. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A recent report from the UN says great apes like orangutans, chimpanzees, and mountain gorillas are in serious danger of going extinct. A lot of conservation work is being devoted to these species, and part of it draws on our sympathy for a species that's so closely related to humans. Ian Redman says there's another important reason to protect these animals. He says great apes are the gardeners of the rainforest. Redman is a tropical field biologist who has worked with mountain gorillas in Africa for 26 years. He says great apes are essential for maintaining the rainforest ecosystem. When they tear off leaves to eat, they also prune the trees and encourage new growth. When they break off branches to build nests, they help sunlight filter down to plants on the forest floor. And when they eat fruit, they also spread the seeds of the fruit far and wide. Redman says those are just a few ways that great apes keep rainforest communities in good shape.
Chimps and gorillas and orangutans are effectively the gardeners of the forest, and we now are starting to value forests not just because of the resources we can get out of them, but because of their beauty and the fact that they're part of the ecology of the planet. So for all those reasons, we value forests. You don't want to shoot the gardeners if you value the forest.
Redmond says people relate more easily to great apes than other rainforest species because these animals look so much like us.
They're considered flagship species. They're the ones that people notice. If they are to survive, then their habitat and all the species that live in that habitat will benefit from the resources they bring.
Redmond says protection of the great apes is essential to ensure their own survival and the long-term protection of rainforests and the other creatures in them. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Truth in Broadcasting. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Friday afternoon here, March 26, 251 days since the outing of Joe Wilson's wife, Valerie Plame, for purely political purposes, bringing down an entire CIA operation, 305 days since we started looking for weapons of mass destruction, 891 days since the anthrax killer struck, just as the Patriot Act was being decided by the people who got struck, Pat Leahy and Tom Daschle. And 902 days in the search for Osama bin Laden. Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 1-866-889-8894. And, boy, we got a bunch of calls here. Some of you may have to hold on over the news into the next hour. Let's take Josh in New Jersey. Hey, Josh, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for helping to raise the quality of talk radio again.
I'm doing my best, Josh.
Hey, I hear you. Well, I just had a couple of things. Pre-attack spin that they're doing, that's pretty typical. It seems like most people ought to be able to see through that.
I don't think most people will, though. I think, you know, and I think that's why they're out there doing it. It'll work. I think to some extent it will work.
Yeah, they're pretty cynical about the intelligence of your average voter, I suppose.
Well, I don't think it's so much the intelligence. I think it's, you know, people have, particularly people who are the victims of conservative economic policies, as is the case with most Americans, have only a certain amount of time that they can pay attention to particular things, and they got to spend a lot of time. You know, they got to focus on their job. They got to focus on getting a paycheck. They got to take care of their families. And then there's politics. You know, and I mean, you know, there's a few of us like you and me who are political junkies, but the vast majority of Americans aren't. And, you know, so, you know, they just kind of catch things as they fly by. And that's what these guys are trying to do is, you know, toss things into the gestalt, into the mix, into the spin, and, you know, hoping it'll stick inside people's brains whether they realize it or not.
Right. One more quick comment. On a more positive note, I'm looking forward to the day when we can get out from under the thumb of these, you know, old world energy executive types, and could have our Manhattan Project and get rid of this old forms of energy and move to some alternative.
I'm right there with you, Josh. I absolutely agree, and very well said. In fact, if you want to see a boom in the United States that would make the dot-com boom look like a boomlet, all you have to do is, you know, promote solar energy and other forms of renewable energy. It would be the best thing that we could do, not only for the United States, for our economy, for jobs, and for the planet. Josh, thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. Chris in New Mexico, Barbara in New Mexico, hang on the line. We'll pick you up on the other side of the news.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. U.S. soldiers in Iraq were plagued by low morale, experienced spikes in suicides last July and November, and lacked access to some medications sought by military mental health specialists to treat emotional problems, Army experts reported on Thursday. A 12-person Army mental health advisory team issued a 38-page report on issues faced by U.S. soldiers in Iraq, including suicide, combat stress, and the availability of help from the Army. The team traveled to Iraq from August to October 2003 and interviewed almost 760 soldiers. The report found a significant proportion of soldiers experienced and reported behavioral health concerns and that there was an unmet need for behavioral services. Trying to blunt allegations the Bush administration mishandled terror threats before September 11th, the White House is offering to let George W. Bush's top national security aide meet privately for a second time with a federal panel investigating the terrorist attacks. The offer comes amid a continued effort by the White House to discredit former counterterrorism chief Richard Clark, a tactic that is beginning to show signs of backfiring. Senate Democratic leader Tom Daschle joined the fray, accusing the administration of character assassination against Clark. Questions have been raised as to why Rice has appeared on numerous television programs over the past few days, yet still refuses to testify publicly in front of the 9/11 Commission. John Curry, promising to create 10 million jobs and keep them in America, has announced a proposal to cut corporate taxes by 5% and eliminate tax loopholes that push jobs overseas. The Democratic presidential nominee-in-waiting said he would fight a reluctant Congress and special interests to carry out the most far-reaching changes in international corporate tax law in four decades. Kerry overrode the objections of some advisors who opposed the corporate tax cut on political grounds. More Minuteman News after this.
I'm Arthur Davis. You may have a serious eye condition and not even know it. Vision loss is not a normal part of aging. Some vision changes are normal. Some are due to eye disease. Do you know the difference? Open your eyes to the facts. To get more information about vision and aging, or find out about what help is available if you're having vision problems, call Lighthouse International at 1-800-829-0500 or visit www.lighthouse.org.
A German woman's joy at the recovery of her missing handbag quickly turned to sorrow after she sped drunk to the police station to fetch it and had her driver's license confiscated, authorities said Thursday. She was so happy to hear about the bag, she jumped straight into the car and came down to get it, said a spokesman. The thing is, we saw her coming. She'd had a lot to drink. The 38-year-old parked in front of the police station but failed to hide the fact that she was inebriated from officers. The first thing she got out of the bag was her license, which we took, along with her car keys, said a spokesman. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Have you been chipped yet? A company called Applied Digital Solutions wants you to undergo a surgical procedure to implant a tiny RFID microchip in your arm. Why would you want to do this? Because radio frequency ID chips will eliminate the heavy burden of having to carry credit cards and remember your ATM numbers. Instead, your arm becomes your card and ID number. Simply run your arm under a scanner, and your embedded radio chip sends a digital signal to the computer, allowing you to complete your transaction. ADS calls its microchip VeriPay. There's only one rational reason that ADS executives think we'll submit to this. They're insane. Insane, but serious. They insist that this technological leap is needed because many people lose their credit cards. VeriPay solves that problem, says a corporate PR flack, cheerfully noting that ADS's chip is subdermal and very difficult to lose. You don't leave it sitting in the back seat of a taxi, he said. Subdermal or not, your ID number still can be stolen by a geeky thief who rigs up a device to intercept your radio-transmitted number, then plays it back later to your ATM machine, emptying your account. If your number is stolen, or if you simply switch credit card companies or banks, what are you to do? No problem, says the PR guy. If you don't want it anymore, you can go to a doctor and have it removed. I call it an opt-out feature, he said gaily. Swell. Instead of simply calling your credit card company to cancel your card, you'd have to call a surgeon. This is progress. Still, ADS is banking on you to get chipped, as they cheerily put it, even offering a $50 discount to the first 100,000 people who sign up. This is Jim Hightower saying, by the way, the honchos of ADS are such business geniuses that the company's stock plummeted from $12 a share 3 years ago to about 40 cents today. I wouldn't entrust two bits to them, much less my arm.
What do you know? Someone's at the door. Hello?
Oh, no, a runaway lawnmower. It's going for the shag carpeting!
A runaway lawnmower. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is a tougher, more impact-resistant floor with Plitanium plywood from Georgia-Pacific. Plitanium is better at withstanding the occasional dropped bowling ball or frozen turkey than building materials made of wood strands glued together. Plitanium plywood. Build it better.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Happy Friday to you. What a marvelous day. The sun is shining here in the People's Republic of Vermont. Looking out my window, I only have about a foot of snow still to go. Much of it is actually, you know, gone out in the open spaces. Maybe a foot and a half right in front of the studio window here. But it's going. It's... And welcome back. Happy Friday to you. What a marvelous day. The sun is shining here in the People's Republic of Vermont. Looking out my window, I only have about a foot of snow still to go. Much of it is actually, you know, gone out in the open spaces. Maybe a foot and a half right in front of the studio window here. But it's going. It's 50 degrees. Amazing. Wonderful. What a great day. What a great week. An extraordinary week. Has George Bush met his Waterloo? Well, time will tell. They are spinning it as fast and as hard as they can, though, this whole thing where it appears that Bush really let us down, didn't defend the nation, didn't think that terrorism was a priority, wanted to, you know, finish his daddy's war, whatever it was. And we ended up with 9/11. 8 minutes.
Going to focus all of that on the fight against terror, which would be Kerry, so obvious. I just got through reading Condoleezza the Hutt's badly put together little missive that was in the Washington Post. I hadn't read it before now. It's sort of a monotone squeal. You know, it wasn't our fault. It wasn't our fault. It wasn't our fault.
Right. But it also was done not under oath.
Yeah, well, that's just the point. How can anybody believe any part of it when you have the National Security Advisor squirming and ducking and dancing, doing anything to avoid speaking on the subject under oath. I mean, talk about stomping a mud puddle in your own credibility. I don't understand how they think they can get away with this.
Yeah, well, they do. They do think they can get away with it, and with a significant portion of the American public, they are getting away with it. So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, that's how they think they can get away with it. It's fairly straightforward. The you know, Goebbels was the one who came up with the idea of it wasn't obviously the first. I mean, you can probably track it back to Caesar or something, but of the big lie. If you tell a lie that's big enough and outrageous enough, often enough and consistently enough, people will say, you know, it's too big to not be true.
Yeah,
you know,
it's got to be true.
I mean, you know, how could they say something if it wasn't true, like that, you know, if it wasn't true?
Well, they're afraid to say it under oath, and that's very, very public. I think it's going to do them damage.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing that I find interesting is in all the newscasts that I saw yesterday, which was, I don't know, probably and listened to probably at least a dozen or more, you know, various this, that, and the other news here and there, only once, did I hear a reporter say that Condoleezza Rice is going to, you know, now wants to testify before the 9/11 Commission, but still refuses to testify under oath?
Under oath, yeah.
Only once. And I frankly, I don't remember which newscast it was, but I thought, wow, you know, somebody got it right. But everybody else is like, oh, she wants to go in and create these she wants to create misperceptions. She wants to go in and fix the misperceptions that Richard Clark created, but she wants to do it in private because that will, you know, be consistent with the laws and the rules about separation of power, even though those rules have been disproved.
Well, it's not a congressional committee. This is not a function of Congress.
I know.
The 9/11 committee.
I know. And we're talking about 9/11 here.
Yeah.
I mean, you would think that if this administration really and truly cared with any integrity and honesty at all about the truth, that they would say, hey, guys, get out there and tell the truth.
Not if you're going to be held responsible for what you say.
Yeah, no, it's not just that. I mean, it's like the thing with Bush plane, Valerie, you know, outing Valerie Plame's Valerie Plame's husband, Joe Wilson's wife.
And, I don't know.
And here he is.
I find out the senior administration official
who leaked it.
Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
You're going to find out who did that. And that's basically what they're saying about 9/11. I don't have any idea. You know, if I had any idea that they were going to use airplanes on November 11th against New York City, I would have done something about it. Yeah, right.
He couldn't have stopped it anyway.
Well, he didn't have any idea that they were going to use airplanes against New York City. Actually, there are some reports that maybe he did, but most of the reports seem to imply that the idea that he had was that they were going to use airplanes against the Pentagon and the White House.
Right.
And those are fairly explicit, and you know, therefore, he took the longest vacation in the history of the presidency in Texas, about as far away as he could get. And then when he was done with that and they still hadn't hit, and the bells and lights are going off like crazy, he says, well, what do I do now? I guess I'll go to Florida. My brother's down there. You know, they can take care of it. Don't get me started.
You have a good day, Tom.
Yeah, thanks for the call. It's good to hear from you, and I do appreciate it. My. Thank you, Chris, for the call. 1-866-889-8894. What tangled webs the Bush administration weaves here. Kevin in Tampa, Florida, is on the line. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing today?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up, Kevin?
Listen, I wanted to tell you about this. I just saw this online. I don't know if you talked about it earlier or not, but Frist wants to investigate Clark now to see if he committed perjury.
Yeah, somebody called about it and said, you know, I hadn't seen it, but of course. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, slander the guy, talk, you know, he must be lusting after his dog or something. You know, I mean, you know, come up with anything you can to nail the guy. And if that doesn't work, of course, then you go after the legal stuff and, you know, drag him through the mud. And he's going to have to hire lawyers now and defend himself and you know, be careful that, you know, what, you know, yeah, it's a, you know,
yeah,
and this is Frist's office who is hacking into Teddy Kennedy's computer for a year and a half.
That is funny. But what Frist wants to do, he wants to declassify his 2002 testimony to see if there were differences between it and his testimony this week.
Yeah. I would like to hear from.
Pathetic.
It's worse than that. It's. I mean, this is. It's worse than that. I would like to know, you know, what Bill Frist has to say about the guy in his office who was breaking into Democratic computers for 18 months and getting information on Supreme Court nominees so that they could, you know, set them up for softballs and things.
And you know, former presidents, there's like a thing that former presidents don't criticize the sitting president.
Yeah. In
Jimmy Carter has been blasting Bush. And at the dinner last night that the Democrats had, I watched it on C-SPAN.
Yeah.
I mean, Jimmy Carter is angry.
Yeah.
This man is mad.
Well, that's because it's not about politics. It's about the survival of democracy. Yeah. Jimmy Carter loves his country, as do I, and as I'm sure you do too, Kevin. And,
yeah.
And that's what it's about. And these guys, these ideological conservatives are systematically dismantling our rational economic system that we've had in the United States that has created the middle class. They are taking apart the middle class. They are taking apart our standing around the world. They think multilateralism is weakness. You know, that is, you know, having allies. Who needs allies? We're the bully on the block. It's nuts. It is wrong. It is damaging this country. It is damaging the future and safety and security of this nation and the world that our children and their children are going to inherit. And so you've got people like Jimmy Carter who's got the courage of his convictions to break tradition. And criticize a former president. I'm sure he really agonized over that.
At that dinner also, he said that Ralph Nader was a personal friend of his, and he told Ralph Nader to go back to checking the back end of cars and not to screw up the election like he did 4 years
ago. You know, somebody in our chat room shared that with me. It was. Okay, great. Yeah, because I was looking for the quote. Thanks for sharing it. But good one, Kevin. Good one, yeah. Yeah.
Well, have a good weekend.
Okay, thanks for calling. Great to hear from you. And it's always super to have people who hang out in our chat room also call in. If you want to drop into the chat room, by the way, you just go to TomHartmann.com and click on the chat link. And don't forget that starting Monday, we're going to be in the Democratic Forum on CompuServe, which is a different place than the chat room is right now, so that you'll have to link off the homepage of TomHartmann.com rather than using your... saved pointers if you're one of the regulars in the chat room. 1-866-889-8894. 17 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartmann radio program, and Kurt in Sacramento, California is on the line. Hey, Kurt, welcome to the show.
Hello, Tom.
What's up?
The longer I did, I was on hold listening to you. I've got more and more questions, but I'll start with off the top somewhere and see how far I get with them. But one thing I heard last night on the radio is that the 9/11 investigating committee, Candelisa will not go under oath for the committee.
That's right.
Are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Okay. She will not go under testify under oath, but they did have somebody else that was under oath said is what she is saying on the other talk shows and TV and so on, is that a true factual statement? And the guy had to say no.
Oh, wait.
Is that a way of getting around her not being under oath?
If that happened, it flew right by me. I didn't catch that.
Driving and things. I didn't pay attention to names of who was being testifying and so on.
Yeah.
Is that a way of getting around her refusing to be under oath? If she's making statements all over the talk shows and things, can they ask somebody else, is what she is saying, is that a factual statement? And they have to, under oath, say, is that true or not true?
Yeah, well, yes and no. I mean, there are, I'm not an attorney, but there are these rules that have to do with hearsay, and I think that somebody could legitimately say, you know, I can't speak for her, and completely evade the question. Say it again?
Yeah, they had to say that, no, that is not a factual statement. Now she wants to go back before the committee.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll have to track it down. I'm sure that if somebody said before the committee that Condoleezza Rice was not making factual statements, that would have been a bigger headline than it is. So I'm guessing that...
Another thing, if I get on to it, then, sure. Well, a couple things. Anyway, with the dinner last night with Jimmy Carter and Clinton and so on speaking, I haven't heard any talk about that. I thought that'd be great fodder for the news talk, whether it's conservative or liberal and so on. I haven't heard anything yet, other than the previous caller said something, but they were both pretty interesting.
Yeah, unfortunately, I was otherwise occupied and I missed it. I've seen clips of it.
It was pretty interesting, especially Carter, you know, so mild, meek, but he doesn't want to badmouth somebody, and he came out very strongly with Nader and Bush both.
Yeah, God bless him.
And then I heard Bush after that was saying that America has the fastest growing economy in the world.
Yeah.
Where in the world is he?
Well, actually, there is a recovery going on for the rich right now. We've just had two quarters in a row of double-digit profits for American corporations. The first time that thing that has happened in you know, since the mid-90s. I mean, it's a major recovery for multinational corporations.
Recovery overseas.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're if you make your living sitting around the pool collecting dividend checks, there's a recovery happening.
Right.
Kurt, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Can I have one more and I'll leave you alone?
I'm sorry. Actually, we're out of time. The music means that we're up against the break. But call back another time. 1-866-889-8894, the Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
Walmart doesn't just dominate the discount retail and grocery industries. It's muscling in on a much more lucrative market, campaign contributions. Walmart is currently the second largest overall donor in the 2004 election cycle, according to an analysis by the Center for Responsive Politics, giving 85% of its donations to Republicans and 15% to Democrats. In the 2002 federal election cycle, Walmart came in 71st among the top 100 donors.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
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 Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Thank you.
is the Tom Hartman Program.
Show a little passion, baby.
And welcome back, Defending America from the Conservative Weapons of Mass Deception. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. One of the folks in our chat room corroborated our caller, and I did a little research here. And sure, you know, it's amazing what you miss when you don't have, you know, the Heritage Foundation doing all their research for you. Or former Enron lobbyist Ed Gillespie in the Republican National Committee feeding you sound bites what's his name, Roger Ailes, the head of Fox News, with his daily talking points memos going out to all the talk show hosts and whatnot. So I just have to do it myself, and here it is. Well, actually, with a little help from the Center for American Progress. Hey, we got a liberal think tank out there. They've pulled together some pretty good information. Condoleezza Rice refutes herself. National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice this week reiterated the president's, quote, ignorance, end quote, defense. But in doing so, repeated a lie that she had previously admitted was a lie. In 2002, she supported the president's had I known defense, saying, and this is a quote, "I don't think anybody could have predicted that the terrorists would try to use an airplane as a missile," end quote. We've all seen that replayed over and over. But when presented this month with overwhelming evidence that the administration had been warned about such a plot, she admitted privately to the 9/11 commission that she had misspoken. Yet even after this admission, she proceeded to repeat the same dishonest claim. It's a very nice way of saying lie. Writing in a Washington Post op-ed this week, quote, "We received no intelligence that terrorists were preparing to attack the homeland using airplanes as missiles," end quote. As one widely respected FBI terrorism expert said, the administration's ignorance defense is, quote, "an outrageous lie, and documents prove it false." Now, moving along on this, Rice this week said that the administration had formulated a national security policy directive before 9/11, quote, "that called for military options to attack al-Qaeda and Taliban leadership," end quote. This is what Rice said to us, not under oath. But according to the 9/11 Commission, there's nothing in the NSPD, the National Security Policy Directive, that came out that we could find. This is a quote from the commission. "There is nothing in the NSPD that came out that we could find that had an invasion plan, a military plan," end quote. Bush Deputy Secretary of State Richard Armitage. And here it is. This is what the caller called about. Two people actually called about. Bush and if you'd like to call, the number is 1-866-889-8894. Bush Deputy Secretary of State Richard Armitage was asked whether Rice's assertions were true. Now, he is testifying under oath. Deputy Secretary of State, and he doesn't work for Rice. He works for Colin Powell. Number two guy. And they said to him, "Is what Condoleezza Rice said, sir, true?" And his answer was, "No." A verbatim quote. Quote, "No," end quote. Now, he didn't embellish. He didn't add to it. He didn't go on and on about it. Add the backgrounders as Dick Clark did. But was Condoleezza Rice telling us the truth, Mr. Secretary, Deputy Secretary of State, Mr. Armitage? No. N-O. And you wonder why she won't testify under oath. Why? It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 29 minutes past the hour. What's happening with the children of Gulf troops? This is a really tragic story. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
I'm Steven Tyler from Aerosmith. Here for RAD. Recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking.
And they don't have to be plastered to kill someone. Even one or two drinks can impair your judgment and change your life forever.
So keep it real, keep it real. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A Pyrrhic victory for opponents to a Department of Labor plan to increase overtime pay exemptions. Democrats in the U.S. Senate managed to amend a trade and tax bill with a provision that would stop the department from cutting off OT to as many as 8 million people. Efforts to remove the provision from the bill have failed, but instead of keeping debate alive on the issue, Senate Republicans yesterday pulled the legislation to the floor. This leaves the Department of Labor free to move forward with the overtime massacre, and it's scheduled to go down on Tuesday.
7 years ago this month, an Exxon Valdez oil tanker hit a reef off the coast of Alaska, spilling millions of gallons of oil into the ocean, devastating local wildlife and communities depending on these now contaminated natural resources for survival. Hundreds of workers who were employed by Exxon as part of the toxic cleanup are now getting sick, and Alaska Community Action on Toxics members are asking the federal government to add more than $100 million to the $900 million settlement it reached with Exxon in 1991. Many workers like Phyllis LeJoe suffer from respiratory trouble, neurological impairment, liver disease, and skeletal deterioration.
I now have emphysema, asthma, multiple allergies, chemical sensitivities, and I also developed diabetes. I'm a mess, let's put it that way. The papers were full of articles about dead animals, but I never saw one report in any newspaper of any of my friends.
Exxon denies any responsibility for the workers' illnesses, suggesting these people could have been exposed to crude oil chemicals elsewhere. It's unclear as to whether Senator Tom Stevens will support the reopener request.
6,500 part-time workers at Walt Disney World have their first union contract. It raises their minimum wage, implements a grievance process, and awards seniority benefits to part-timers. The workers ratified the deal on Wednesday. It took more than a year for the company to recognize the union and seriously negotiate the new contract. Now Disney World turns its attention to negotiations with more than 25,000 full-time union workers at the park whose contract expires in May.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 93 years ago this week, the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory in New York City caught fire. 146 mostly young immigrant women burnt alive because the owner had locked them in the factory. The disaster led to the creation of a series of state laws that dramatically improved safety conditions within factories. Yet fires and explosions are still a workplace hazard. The Department of Labor says fires and explosions killed more than 600 people in the last 5 years.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. It's the place where smart people get their news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman radio program. Oh, this is just absolutely incredible. It's absolutely incredible. What is going on? It is just incredible. Ann Coulter, today, on MSNBC's website, writes about Richard Clark that he is, I'm quoting, He is, you know, a career chair warmer who is upset a black woman took his job, end quote. This is the news spin. Richard Clark is doing it because he's a racist. Now, I mean, the talking point, every day it's a new talking point for these guys. This is incredible. And do you think it's a coincidence that Ann Coulter says, Richard Clark is, you know, a career chair warmer who is upset a black woman took his job. And yesterday, Bob Novak writes or says, do you believe that Dick Clark has a problem with this African-American woman, Condoleezza Rice? I mean, how low can they go? Oh, he's attacking the administration because he's a racist. He doesn't like the fact that the national security advisor is a black woman. I'm not making this up, and I don't mean that as a parody of some other talk show host. I mean, I'm not making this up. Yesterday, Bob Novak says, do you believe that Dick Clark has a problem with this African-American woman, Condoleezza Rice? And then Ann Coulter today writes, Richard Clark is, you know, a career chair warmer who is upset a black woman took his job. It's enough to make your head explode. And now here, you know, of course, the Bush administration, George Bush last night, again, saying, and Condi Rice going on TV and saying over and over and over again, no, if we had any idea that Al-Qaeda represented a threat, we would have taken them out. No, the Clinton administration really didn't tell us that. No, we were we were really focused on terrorism. I mean, the big lie was Condoleezza Rice on NBC News the night before last saying we actually increased funding for counterterrorism efforts, when in fact they didn't. So here's the Daily Mislead. We should have music for this, you know. Barumpa. Here's the from the misleader.org. You can find this on the internet. It's a great little, you know, email thing that they send out. A previously forgotten report from April of 2001, now keep in mind this is 4 months before 9/11, shows that the Bush administration officially declared it a mistake, this is in quotes, a mistake to focus, quote, so much energy on Osama bin Laden, end quote. Now this is in April of 2001. 4 months before 9/11, the Bush administration officially says that the Clinton administration made a mistake focusing so much attention on bin Laden. Here is the CNN report. Specifically, on April 30th, 2001, CNN reported that the Bush administration's release of the government's annual terrorism report contained a serious change. Quote, there was no extensive mention of alleged terrorism mastermind Osama bin Laden, end quote, as there had been in previous years. When asked why the administration had reduced the focus, quote, a senior Bush State Department official told CNN, the U.S. government made a mistake in focusing so much energy on bin Laden, end quote. This was in April of 2001. The move to downgrade the fight against al-Qaeda before 9/11 was not the only instance where the administration ignored warnings that an al-Qaeda attack was imminent. Specifically, the Associated Press reported in 2002 that, quote, President Bush's national security leadership met formally nearly 100 times in the months prior to the 9/11 attacks, yet terrorism was the topic during only two of those sessions, end quote. Meanwhile, Newsweek has reported that internal government documents show that the Bush administration moved to, quote, de-emphasize counterterrorism, end quote, prior to 9/11. Here's a quote from Newsweek. When FBI officials sought to add hundreds more counterintelligence agents to deal with the problem, they got shot down by the White House. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number if you'd like to offer your thoughts or opinions on this. Jane in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Jane, welcome to the program. Oh, wait a second. I'm sorry. That's Brett. Brett in Minnesota. I got so many lines lit up here, Brett, I lost track. But you are actually the next caller, so Jane, we'll be next. Hey, Brett, what's up?
Not much. How you doing?
Great.
Good. I was hoping you can help me out here. I'm having a debate at work with a fellow employee, and I'm hoping you can point me into the right direction for a web page or something that would show the differences in corporate welfare versus public welfare, the monetary differences.
There are many. Actually, if you plug corporate welfare into Google, you'll probably find lots and lots of them. I do have, you know, something. Luis should have given me a heads up on this because I've got a stack. Ah, here we are, right here. Facts on corporate welfare. This is from OMBWatch.org. OMB as in Office of Management and Budget Watch.org. And I'll just read to you this. You've got to dig down into it. /article/article print/428/-1/87/. Okay, but you know you can. I'm sure if you just go to ombwatch.org and then type, and then use Google and just Google that one site, and okay. And look for corporate welfare. For example, here's from their this news release. Average taxpayers pick up an expensive tab for corporate welfare expenditures. Government spending for corporate welfare programs far exceeds government spending for social programs. Fact. Spending for corporate welfare programs outweighs spending for low-income programs by more than 3-to-1, $167 billion to $51.7 billion. Source, aid for corporations from the Corporate Welfare Project, and how much do we spend on welfare from the center on budget and policy priorities. Fact. Total spending on safety net for the poor costs the average taxpayer about $400 a year, while spending on corporate welfare programs costs the same taxpayer about $1,400 a year. That source is from the Congressional Budget Office. Fact, over 90% of the budget cuts passed by the last Congress cut spending for the poor, programs that ensure food for the needy, housing for the homeless, job training for the unemployed, community health care for the sick. And fact, only 3.9% of total federal outlays go to programs that solely benefit poor people. So there's a few statistics for you, a little ammunition. OMBWatch.org. Hope that helps.
I sure appreciate it. I'm sure it will. And keep up the good work.
Okay, good. Thanks for the call, Brett. And I appreciate your kind comments. 1-866-889-8894. And now let's go to Jane in New Mexico. Hey, Jane, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I wanted to thank you so much for what you're doing because everything you're saying is right. And when I hear the Republicans come on, they get me so angry. One of the things, I was watching Richard Clark speak, and at one place he said he had given some information to Condoleezza Rice, and then he said he asked for another appointment, and she wouldn't give it to him.
Right.
And today I was reading an article in the paper that instead of speaking before the commission, she wrote an article in the paper.
Right, in the Washington Post.
Did you read it?
I did. I haven't read it. I've read of it. It was in yesterday.
Yeah, and it's awful. And no wonder she doesn't go before the commission because he said that when she looked at him, he thought she looked at him with hate. But you can see that when she's talking to the newscasters on television.
Yeah, my recollection is that he said that she looked at him with confusion when he raised Al-Qaeda, that she didn't know what he was talking about.
Yeah, but then I listened. He just asked you about the budget and the numbers you were telling him. And I was listening to Bush in a speech today, and he was telling all the people to go ahead and help the homeless. And in other words, he was being a preacher talking to the people and telling them that they should take care of the homeless and the education and everything. What he's trying to do is get rid of the government.
Well, and see, in a way, George Bush is right. We should take care of those who can't take care of themselves. It's you know, you could say it's a religious obligation, it's a social obligation, it's a cultural obligation, or at the most selfish level, it's simply the kind of world we want to live in, where we don't walk out of the front door of our house and have, you know, begging children sticking their hands in our faces.
Well, but that's true. They're doing it now.
But let me finish. We should be doing that, and we do it through government. The people do that. I mean, you know, we have decided as a society historically, yes, I mean, this goes back to literally Ben Franklin's time. There, you know, Thomas Jefferson signed a law for the care of the poor when he was president in 1801.
Right.
I mean, this is an old thing that we've done in the United States where we say, hey, if somebody really and truly is down on their luck, we're not just going to say, hey, go find a church to take you in. I mean, we would love it if the churches did. We would love it if philanthropists took you in. But we realize that, you know, we want to live in a reasonable reasonable, rational society where we don't have starving people in the streets, and we're willing to pay for that. We're willing to pay for the quality of life that comes along with that.
We can't keep giving donations to everybody when we're not making enough money ourselves.
Well, and you're giving donations to the government right now, but the reality is that on a 3-to-1 basis, that money is going to corporate welfare instead of human welfare. And what's right about that? Well, what's right about that is that George Bush gets that money back in the form of campaign contributions.
Well, thank you very much, Tom.
You're welcome, Jane. Thanks for calling. It's always great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Ann Coulter. Richard Clark, as you know, a career chairwoman who is upset a black woman took his job. Robert Novak, do you believe that Dick Clark has a problem with this African-American woman, Condoleezza Rice? The new spin from the right wing, oh, Richard Clark is a racist. Mind-boggling. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the program. Michael in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Michael, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. And hold on, let me get over here. Yeah, I called a right-wing nut on here in Albuquerque, and I said, you know, before the show pretty much got underway, I said, you know, what you're going to talk about today is that one of the main things is that Richard Clark is a racist because a black woman took his job. And then I went over a couple more talking points, and there was dead silence for about, 15 seconds.
Are you on the RNC list?
What's that?
Do you get the? You know, I get these talking points from the Republican National Committee,
I get the talking points every morning too.
Yeah.
So I called them and I said, "This is what you're going to talk about today." I listened about three or four things, and he got mad. He got, you know, he says, "Don't you tell me what I'm going to talk about on my show?" And he hung up on me. So I listened to him for a little while, and guess what he started talking about?
Yeah. Yeah.
About a convenient half an hour later, you know, Richard Clark is a racist because, you know, and I'm like, are these guys that coordinated, Tom?
They actually are. I mean, you know, in this day of email, it's not particularly difficult. I mean, you're getting their talking points. I'm getting their talking points. They're getting their talking points. You've got, you know, the Heritage Foundation issues these missiles regularly. You've got the Republican National Committee sending this stuff out. Of course, there's the right wing websites, you know, Newsmax.com and whatnot. And to be fair and balanced here. The Center for American Progress, which is the only left-wing think tank in existence, you know, going up against the 40 or so right-wing ones, you know, they put out every day their summary of the day's news, and I look that thing over and I use it from time to time on this program. So I think that everybody's looking for some news, and everybody's looking
right.
for, you know, so I don't want to totally criticize them. On the one hand, on the other hand. You know, yeah, they are that orchestrated. It really is.
Well, I tried to call him on it, and I was surprised when it happened. He had to wait about, I think, a convenient half an hour before starting to talk about Richard Clark. We could tell that's what he wanted to do right off the bat.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm just amazed at that, you know, I call it the virtual propaganda industry, and hopefully people are starting to wake up to it. So.
Well, all of us in this business have to respond to the news. I try every day to have a particular theme to, you know, we try to do each hour as a standalone hour, because some radio stations carry some hours and some others, you know, not and whatnot. And also people tune in and they tune out. And in each hour I try to have a theme. And, you know, whether it's the jobs and the economy or whether it's, you know, the history of the United States or whether it's what's going on in Iraq or whether it's Richard Clark. And I read the newspapers and I cut out articles. I mean, this is part of our show prep. You know, we do this in the evening and the whole morning before the show. And you know, read the Wall Street Journal, read the local paper, catch the news. I look at the right-wing websites for their talking points. I look at the left-wing websites for their talking points, and you pull it all together, and then you decide, okay, you know, what are we going to do today for the show? And so, to some extent, everybody in this business is driven by the news. What's fascinating to me, though, is that there is, on the right, there is this extraordinary spin machine, whereas on the left, there's pretty much the, hey, here's what's going on. Did you hear about this? Which is not to say that there's no spin on the left. Certainly there has to be some, but it's just mind-boggling on the right, which is, as you pointed out. So anyhow,
you're very fair-minded.
We'll leave it.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you. Maybe I'm not so fair-minded, but I've got an attitude. I'll tell you right up front. Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Roy, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Tom. Part of what Shrub said this morning in his speech was that only parents can give their children the the total love that they deserve. But only parents can give their kids the love that they really deserve. And it's up to parents to give their kids the love that they deserve.
And we need to learn this from the president. I assume he was making a point that this didn't just come out of nowhere.
He was reading it from a speech. I got up. I was watching it in my study when I was doing some studying myself. I got up and went out to the living room to tell my wife about it. And I said, you realize Shrub knows that only parents can give their kids. And a speechwriter read it.
And
you could see him reading it off the note card.
Yeah, and he wants us to know it. Well, God bless him. He wants us to know that. That's a marvelous thing, Roy. Roy, I gotta go.
Okay,
thanks for the call. And the Shrub alert there. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
That grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
New research documents the importance of evolution when diseases jump from animals to people. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A lot of people were worried last year about a brief outbreak of monkeypox, and there's concern now about a new outbreak of SARS. There's good reason for the attention. Each disease involves a nasty virus that jumped from animals to people and seriously threatens the health of anyone who gets infected. If a new disease can be kept from spreading, it can stop an epidemic in the short term, but health officials might need to pay more attention to the potential of some viruses to evolve once they enter the human population. A recent article in the journal Nature examines the importance of evolution in turning some viruses into serious threats to public health. Rustam Antia is a biologist at Emory University in Atlanta, and he worked on the study. He says people are part of the problem with these emerging diseases. In some cases, people are living in much closer proximity to animals that carry disease. In addition, crowded cities make it easier for the disease to spread from one person to another.
We have an enormous number of changes, and many of these changes lead to increased contact between humans, and things that lead to increased contact between humans will lead to this increased spread of existing pathogens and also the emergence of new pathogens.
Antia and his colleagues developed mathematical models that evaluate the risk of a virus mutating into a form that could cause an epidemic. Antia says this research might not produce immediate cures for diseases like SARS and monkeypox, but it does explain more about how infectious diseases spread, and that can lead to more effective methods of controlling them. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
She looked me over and I guess she thought I was all right. All right in the sort of a limited way for an off night. She said, don't I know you from the cinematographer's party? I said, who am I to blow against the wind?
And welcome back. It's the pill that will help you escape the matrix. Is it the red pill or the green pill? It's the Tom Hartman Program pill. Interesting. Which color would it be? This is on a serious note here. This is a story that was in the Telegraph, the British newspaper. The Telegraph is one of the, I'd say, the three largest of the British newspapers. It's sort of like the Washington Post of newspapers in England. Babies, and this story from day before yesterday, babies whose fathers served in the first Gulf War are 50% more likely to have physical abnormalities than those born to soldiers not sent to the region, according to a study published today. 50% more likely to have physical abnormalities. Increased risks of genital, urinary, and renal abnormalities, kidney abnormalities, and deformed limbs, bones, and muscles were found in the Ministry of Defense funded survey. Miscarriages, and this is their equivalent of the Pentagon looking into this thing. Miscarriages were also 40% more common in the pregnancies of wives and partners of male veterans deployed in the conflict. This is a 6-year study. It was just published in the International Journal of Epidemiology. And the take home from this, the what's the message that we need to carry home from this that they highlight, is that nobody has begun to look at the children who are produced, the offspring of those who are in this Iraqi deployment. Of course, because the soldiers are either still there, or they've come home and there hasn't been enough time. It takes 9 months to produce a baby, right? Hasn't been enough time. But there's Terry English, the British Royal Legion, said anecdotal evidence from veterans has suggested a far greater rate of miscarriage, and this appears to be the first scientific evidence that confirms this study. And they say we need to be keeping our eyes on this thing, and nobody knows what's causing this. And that, again, is this depleted uranium, or is this the vaccines? Or is there some, lachmesis or something? I mean, is it one of the diseases of the Middle East? My guess, frankly, would be it's depleted uranium. But nobody knows. Nobody knows. A big problem. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Thanks to Louise for producing the show today. Thanks to Brad Walrod in New York for editing our music and compiling it. Thanks to our sponsors for making it possible. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Don't forget, Monday it'll be a different place over in the Democratic Forum. This is Tom Hartman. See you next week.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.